One in, one out, or one big con? You'll hear from the Home Secretary in this hour. In other related news...
Reform UK is stepping up calls on the government to routinely make public the immigration status of people charged with criminal offences. I'm LBC's George Ike with the story shortly.
As it's revealed, one in three GP visits are still not face-to-face, the rate hitting the highest proportion since COVID. Should we have health concerns? Mike Barlow's wife Laura died last year from liver and bowel cancer. She was misdiagnosed.
We didn't get the opportunity. When they diagnosed over the phone, they told me to pick up some painkillers. We believed the doctor, and that's what doctors are there for, to tell us what's wrong with my wife.
Plus, the hunt for the missing British woman who seemed to vanish from her sunbed in Greece while her husband was asleep. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a pilot of Britain's small boats return deal with France has come into force for the first time. The UK will be able to send people crossing the English Channel back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to Britain. The one-in, one-out scheme is designed to put people off making the journey. Tony Smith, a former Director General of Border Force, has warned it may not go far enough.
Will the numbers involved in this be a sufficient deterrent to stop people coming? I hope it is, because, you know, and it's a step in the right direction. But I'm afraid at the moment, I am not confident that it's going to make much of an impact.
Engineers are working to fix power cuts and clear debris from railway lines after Storm Floris. Scottish Government ministers held an emergency meeting last night to coordinate their response to the disruption. A number of ScotRail routes are still suspended this morning. Dozens of suspects are still wanted by police over disorder that broke out across the UK last summer. A website is being set up in a fresh effort to track them down. LBC's Chris Chambers has more details.
These are people who were caught on camera during the disorder that followed the Southport stabbings. Over the last 12 months, 1,876 people have been arrested across the country, but dozens of people remain unidentified, and police say the fact they are still going after them should serve as a deterrent for people in the future. Most are around the Merseyside, Greater Manchester and Cleveland areas, with some in Northumbria and Avon and Somerset as well.
Police investigating an alleged assault at St Pancras Station in London have arrested a 42-year-old man at Luton Airport. A video emerged last week appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson next to a man lying on the floor. A third of GP appointments in England in June were carried out over the phone or online. That is up from 30% a year earlier to the highest proportion since the pandemic. The Department of Health says patients can still access face-to-face appointments if they want or need them. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.28 after closing up 59 yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places with heavier rain across central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, it's 3 minutes after seven, Tuesday, August the 5th, and the one-in, one-out deal is on, but I'll be asking, is it one big con? And you'll hear from the Home Secretary. Remember, it's going to allow for about 50 a week. Well, 875 arrived on one day last week, so is it really going to tackle it? And if you allow that one migrant arrives here every 12 minutes, it's laughable, isn't it? Or is it, as they've said, a pilot and it will lead to greater things? You'll hear from the Home Secretary. In other news, crisis in our jails. How many times have you heard that? David Gawk, the former senior Conservative MP, chaired the Ministry of Justice Sentencing Review. He told me in May of the challenges in the prison system.
With overcrowding, with the capacity issues, comes lots of other issues with the system. It's very hard to deliver rehabilitation within prisons, for example, when there are so many people within it.
A landmark report, it's being called, is published today, saying the prison system was days from collapse on three separate occasions. I'll speak with the report's author. In other news,
Reform's new prison czar has opened the door to a fresh debate about the death penalty. That's despite Nigel Farage ruling it out. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive.
Plus, how comfortable are you with one in three GP visits still not face-to-face? The rate hitting the highest proportion since COVID, and as you heard earlier, some people say misdiagnoses can prove fatal. Plus, a nation that loves to shop.
Brits spent £740 million last year on the continent. It's VAT-free, but we've scrapped a similar scheme here in the UK. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this with Nick shortly.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's on. The UK will today begin detaining people who arrive on small boats and return some to France within days after the EU gave the deal the green light by allowing France to sign it. The treaty will see the Home Office send asylum seekers back across the Channel for the first time in exchange for accepting some directly from France via a safe route. This is called the one-in, one-out scheme. Announcing the agreement at the beginning of last month, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, said,
"For the very first time, migrants arriving via small boat will be detained and returned to France in short order. In exchange for every return, a different individual will be allowed to come here via a safe route, controlled and legal, subject to strict security checks, and only open to those who have not tried to enter the UK illegally."
Now, as you've heard me say on many occasions, and indeed I challenged a relevant minister yesterday, currently the pilot scheme is going to allow for around 50 people each week. Now, to put that in context, you may recall last week the number of arrivals went above 25,000, with 870 arriving on one day alone last week. There is also the possibility that fewer than 50 could be returned. That's something I challenged the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, on last month.
In terms of people applying to come to the UK, we've said that priority will be given to people who have a connection to the UK, or people who are most likely to be genuine refugees or been targeted by the smuggling gangs as well. But this is a pilot and we will develop it over time. But that principle, that fundamental change is really important.
So it could be fewer than 50 if the number's not fixed.
Well, we will start this and we will grow this. That's the approach that we will take, and that's why we've not fixed numbers.
Right. So, lastly, Home Secretary, it could be fewer than 50. The answer, which is yes. So,
Nick, what you're trying to do is to get me to sort of to play in,
well,
and
you were
to speculate
the one
about different numbers.
You were the one who said the number's not fixed.
Yeah, it's not fixed. Exactly. That's
so it could
point.
Be fewer
it's
than 50.
Fixed. So I'm not going to speculate about the numbers that we'll get to. And, you know, part of the reason that I'm not going to speculate about the numbers is partly because we will develop this over time and it is a pilot, and also partly because there are ways in which we don't want the smuggler gangs to find different ways round this.
Yvette Cooper joins us later in this hour. Perhaps we might hope for a clearer answer. But on this related subject, I spoke yesterday with the Border Security Minister, Dame Angela Eagle, and I challenged her over the vast amount of money we were already sent to France. I remind you, it was in the order of around £700 million, to achieve virtually nothing. Her defence?
Well, because if we fall out with the French and we don't cooperate with the French in policing at the borders, then more people will come across.
Well, how could it be any worse?
Well,
we're giving them money for nothing.
Nick, this is not true.
But what are they doing?
Nick, it's a very long border. They are now, thanks to us, changing their stance in the maritime area, so they will interdict in shallow waters, which they hadn't been allowed to do before now. This year so far, they have stopped over 13,000 people coming across with the work that they've done. So if we fall out with the French and have a big row with them, then that's not going to make things better.
So let them take money for nothing.
It's highly likely to make things worse. We are cooperating with the French. We are dealing with financing things like their specialist police outfit, the company Dimash, which is much more effective than what was there before. We're already seeing an increase in interdictions. We are going to have to work with them to do our one-in, one-out pilot. Having a big row with them, Nick, isn't going to make things better. It will make things worse.
I say again, her boss, effectively the Home Secretary, is with us later, 9 after 7. Dr. Peter Walsh is senior researcher at the University of Oxford's Migration Observatory, who regularly helps us on matters such as these and joins me now. What merit one-in, one-out in your view, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, in a certain sense, there's something, I think, politically and diplomatically significant about this. The previous government lobbied France for a similar returns deal without much success. Most notably, you'll recall at the end of 2021 when Prime Minister Boris Johnson wrote a public letter to President Macron asking for a returns deal under which all Channel migrants would be returned to France, although not seemingly offering much in return. And it's understood the French president responded privately, suggesting that a more balanced agreement would be appropriate. That's what we have here. It's a deterrence policy. Its deterrent effect is likely to depend on sufficiently large numbers being returned to France. Clearly, we won't see that in the short term, maybe even not the medium term. So the big question for me is, will they be able to ramp up these returns to sufficiently large numbers?
What would you define as a sufficiently large number?
Very difficult to put a percentage on it. Certainly wouldn't be 5%, which is what 50 a week would achieve. 20, 30, 40, 50%. I mean, one of the key things is that it will need to filter through to individuals who are in Calais. And once they start finding out that compatriots, members of their network, have been unsuccessful, then it could begin to move the needle.
Do you think the deal has the capacity, capability to achieve that, Doctor?
That's the big question. I mean, and it's a real unknown. I mean, the government believes that it can ramp up these returns. In a sense, the logistical challenge here is less difficult than Rwanda. And of course, there were always questions about how many people we would send to Rwanda. Another part of this is, of course, legal challenges. They're likely to focus on the fairness of the process by which individuals are selected for removal to France. But we're not envisaging late night injunctions from the Strasbourg court. The big thing that scuppered Rwanda, of course, was Rwanda not being a safe country. France is. So the prospects for successful legal challenges considerably slimmer than adhered in the case of Rwanda.
Lastly, Doctor, why does this appear to be a problem that defies any solution?
Because it's very difficult to solve and there's no silver bullet. I mean, the one thing that's shown to have worked in other contexts, like Australia, Turkey and the EU, is physical interdiction of boats while they're in the water. The difference here is that these boats are really overloaded. Any kind of disruption on board can lead to a crush. It can lead to people going overboard. And that's why the French are really resolute in saying, look, we can't do that. It's too dangerous. So we're really at that impasse with the French, and that's unlikely to change.
Grateful for your time as ever. Thank you, Peter. Dr. Peter Walsh, senior researcher at the University of Oxford's Migration Observatory. Let's get some input now from Natasha Sangaridis, who's Associate Director of Advocacy at the organisation Freedom for Torture. As you're hearing it, obviously we've yet to actually see the pilot in action, but your reaction to it. Good morning.
Morning. So we welcome the fact that the Prime Minister has said that the UK must remain in principle a place of sanctuary for refugees and that the government is seeking international collaboration. But this pilot scheme, while it's offering a route to safety for a very few refugees, it's going to rely on the mass mandatory detention of survivors of torture and persecution. And that is of enormous concern to us as a clinical organisation.
Yes, I mean, not everyone making the crossing, of course, is trying to get away from torture.
Absolutely. absolutely. The government doesn't collect statistics on the numbers of torture survivors, but we know that roughly one in three people claiming asylum in similarly high-income countries tend to be survivors of torture. And what we know clinically...
Why is the proportion so high for males, do you suppose, for men?
Well, typically the reasons men are sent first are for a number of reasons. Firstly,
but if you're being tortured, you'd just want to get out of there, wouldn't you?
Yes, absolutely.
So why would you send your husband or brother or nephew first? Why wouldn't you all leave together if you're being tortured?
Well, men are sometimes the source of the problems, right? They have been participating in political...
If I'm a woman, why would I send my nephew? Why wouldn't I leave with him?
Oh, well, women do leave. Women absolutely
I thought you said men were the ones... I mean, I've got figures here from the House of Commons Library. You're aware what the breakdown is about?
No, sorry, one in three people in general, not men, one in three people in general from similarly high-income countries tend to be survivors of torture. And what we know about this particular cohort of people is that detention settings specifically reactivate their trauma, because typically those who have been horribly abused are done so in these detention settings. And so when they are locked up and they're surrounded by people in uniform and they hear jangling keys, all of these things provoke re-traumatisation.
So
and
what
this
would
pilot
your
scheme
be, lastly, of the 25,000 people who've crossed so far, have crossed the channel on small boats, are you telling me around eight point something thousand of those will be fleeing torture?
I mean, it's extremely difficult, right? And I'm not going to pretend that I know, but the academic reviews that have been conducted, and there are a few of them out there in the public domain, have come to the conclusion that it is about one in three.
Really?
People claiming asylum are survivors of torture.
I'll take your figures. You work in that field. It's just you see the photographs of the boats and it doesn't look as though they're fleeing torture. But who knows? Natasha Sangarides is Associate Director of Advocacy at Freedom for Torture. Freedom from Torture. We'll take your reactions on that. Also coming up later in this hour, how we love to shop and how we make savings when we're on the continent. 7:16 LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
A pilot of the one-in-one-out deal to return small boat migrants to France has come into force. Travel disruption is continuing this morning after Storm Floris brought strong winds to Scotland, and police have renewed their appeal to find dozens of suspected rioters a year after widespread disorder. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most on a calmer morning, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the North Circular Road, westbound from Henley's Corner to the Brent Cross flyover. And that's all down to an accident. Very busy on the A12 northbound to Junction 16 at Gallywood. It's all down to an accident and two lanes are closed. The A10 Stoke Newington High Street is closed both ways, and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. In Greenwich, there are queues on the A2 Blackheath Road. This is going westbound to Lewisham Road, and that's all down to the temporary traffic lights. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line and minor delays on the District and Bakerloo lines. And on the Jubilee line, Swiss Cottage Station remains closed.
This is LBC.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-road adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge. Helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. Two models, one offer. Both $325 a month with $325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual hatchback or Sports Tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car, Stellantis Financial Services.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11am, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to your calls, Peter, you're going to be the first caller. Will one out, one in, one out work, or is it one big con job? We'll hear from the Home Secretary. Your views in just a moment. Just quickly through just some of the front pages again, actually. Although there's agreement over what, excuse me, the front page picture should be, which is England's valiant attempt in the last day of the last test down at the Oval, and Chris Wokes running. I mean, what a brave bloke doing that with his arm effectively in a sling. Pain in vain for England's one-armed warrior. That's the Daily Telegraph. That's the a lot of papers go with that as their front page picture. There's a wide variety of stories. I'll stay with the Telegraph. Parents pay £500 million to beat school VAT raid. This is if you're in a fortunate enough position to pay all of the fees up in advance or up front. Then they were saving. Many schools are offering you the opportunity to save the VAT. Of course, that's supposing that you have tens of thousands of pounds in the bank. The Treasury are already saying that that was accounted for in their figures. They would say that, wouldn't they? The Daily Mail tells us that Iran has asked the Taliban for a spy kill list, a leaked database revealing details of the agents there. The Times says the PM and police are at odds over migrant suspects. This is the growing row over what we can or cannot be told in the light of that case that's going on in Nuneaton and the involvement, of course, of reform there. The Home Secretary, as I should remind you, is with us later in the hour. We'll put that to her. The Eye has the story we're discussing. Home Office to detain small boat migrants for deportation to France in days. Quickly to the LBC app and to a website or two. And it's the one-in, one-out deal that's leading the LBC app with one of those vivid photographs of a rubber dinghy with, I don't know, 5, 10, 15, 25, 30, 30. I would say nudging 50 people, all of them men. And we're told that at least a third of them will be fleeing torture. Take that, if you will. And the front page of Sky News has... I'm so sorry, the front page of the Sky News has this story about the missing Greek woman that we're doing. And the front page of the Sun, yet more problems for the BBC. Jay Blades, who was the host of The Repair Shop, he's been charged with two counts of rape and faces court next week. Now, what must it be like to be at the BBC? The day before yesterday, there was cocaine on Strictly Come Dancing. Today, there's the allegations... of rape against a very high-profile star, who, by the way, also took part in Strictly Come Dancing. That's one heck of a show, that Strictly Come Dancing. Can't wait for it to come back on a Saturday. Right, Peter's in Stirling. One in, one out, your view. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Firstly, I'd like to say I think it's a good start. People really need to remember this is a pilot programme. I know we've lost all sense of patience in this country. We seem to have devolved down to the patience of a five-year-old stamping their feet and wanting everything now. But it's a pilot programme. And in some ways, the numbers are almost going to be meaningless. It's about building up the system and re-establishing that relationship with the French. We can't just throw money at them. We have to have a cordial, reciprocal arrangement with them.
Why have we been, and I appreciate it wasn't your decision, Peter, but many would say, well, why have we been throwing money at them for 7 years then?
Well, because it's the only thing we really can do since we left the EU. Under the EU, we had the legal means to do it.
We didn't send people back when we were in the European Union. Remember, they would arrive on, in this way, of course, it was more through vehicles, it was in lorries and other things. And they would then stay in this country as well, so we didn't send them back when we were in the European Union. There was no difference.
Right, but the key thing was we had the legal means to it. But it doesn't matter,
we didn't do it.
Well, that's because that was the government of the day. That was an internal thing.
That was successive governments. That was the Labour government, that was Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, David Cameron. Nobody had the will to do it. So please don't tell me if we were still in the European Union, this wouldn't be a problem. Otherwise, why are there fights going on between Germany and Italy, Italy and France, Germany and France? I mean, it's a problem across the whole of the continent that defies solution. And I mean, you're right, Peter. It is a try. Hmm. Let's see. But my God, it couldn't be less ambitious, could it? If you tried.
Well, I think it's got to, we've got to start.
We have.
I mean, right. What is the alternative? And those successive governments you named, by the way, are all notoriously lax. They're all notoriously lax on immigrants. I voted Labour, and I will happily concede New Labour was really lax on immigration. It was almost a thing that no government wanted to touch. So,
I still talk of the pull factor. I still say that we're not doing enough to make it encouraging or desirable to come to this country. Let's try the pilot scheme, but as Emmanuel Macron said, there is too much of a pull factor here, and we might, and I hate to say it, we might have to go to ID cards so that these people can't disappear onto the employment black market.
Well, I think, I don't know how you're going to communicate these so-called deterrents to these people. I mean, I don't think they're tuning into Sky News or the BBC, are they? They're not checking Google, are they? Quite often, are they? So,
I've no idea. I've no idea where they get their news. Obviously, the hope will be that if there is video footage of the boats going back, taking 50 a week, it might make a difference. We'll see. Peter, thank you. Andy, coming to your call on that, but as I went through the front pages of the newspapers, I did cite the Times and this ongoing row between the Prime Minister and the police over whether migrant suspects, the level of information that should be given when they're alleged to have taken part in high-profile crimes. LBC's reporter George Icke has the latest background. George.
Morning, Nick. Nigel Farage and George Finch, Reforms leader of Warwickshire County Council, made comments yesterday at a news conference after two men were charged in connection with the alleged rape of a 12-year-old girl in Nuneaton. Ahmad Mullakil and Mohammed Kabir, who are both 23, have been remanded in custody and are due before Warwick Crown Court at the end of this month. A newspaper reported over the weekend that the men were Afghan asylum seekers. Warwickshire Police and the Home Office wouldn't confirm that when LBC asked them. George Finch told a news conference yesterday he'd written to the force's chief constable and the Home Secretary asking them to make public more details about the suspect's background.
The thing is, I was begging for this to be released, screaming, phoning, asking it to be released. And I want to say to all reform councillors and all councillors in the country, our communities are at a breaking point. We're the last line of defence. And we have to fight every step of the way. It has to stop.
Now, my LBC colleague Natasha Clark was at that news conference and asked Nigel Farage whether putting suspects' immigration status in the public domain risked possible disorder.
Your critics will, of course, say that this is going to inflame community tensions. This could cause unrest on our streets. We are already seeing a very precarious situation. Is that not just going to make things far, far worse?
What caused unrest on our streets after Southport last year was us not being told the status of the attacker. That led to crazy conspiracy theories spreading online. And, you know, we might not like the truth, but we can accept the truth. But to have masses of speculation as to what might have happened makes things, I think, far worse than they otherwise would be.
Now, Warwickshire Police say they follow national guidance when anyone's charged with a criminal offence, which does not include sharing ethnicity or immigration status. In a statement, it goes on to say, when something significant happens, we brief elected officials on the circumstances of the crime, the investigation, the work being undertaken to arrest those responsible, and how local people and partners can help a concerned community. The government says the criminal justice system is operationally independent, and the Law Commission is currently reviewing whether new rules are needed to let the police release more information about suspects.
George Icke reporting, and we'll come back to that conversation at 8 o'clock in just over half an hour's time, 7:28 now. And is in Basingstoke. One in, one out. What chance of success do you give it? Let's hope it works. What do you reckon? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. You're driving me mad as usual. It makes much more sense than anything that Reform or all the Conservatives tried. The referendum deal cost, what, £750 million?
Mm-hmm.
And it was never going to work.
How do you know it was never going to work?
Well, OK, so if you're going to take that argument, how do you know this scheme isn't going to work?
Well, let me finish.
The capacity on this scheme is far larger than the any capacity that this Miranda scheme would have had.
If you look
at why Australia,
if you looked at why Australia worked, it was because there was a third party, let me just point out. There was a third party or a third country where people were taken to. That's why many people believe Australia worked.
It didn't work in the same way. It was a totally different scheme, a totally different situation, Nick. Beyond Australia, where else has it worked?
Turkey.
If you think it worked, where else? Where are Turkey sending people?
Well, let me finish. Italy is using it now, and they pay, I think it's €5,000 to Algeria and to Morocco for every asylum seeker that they take. Italy report that it is having... I know, I'm not talking to you from Rome, I don't know. But they report that it is going quite well. So what we'll know is... we will never know if Rwanda worked. It should have at least been attempted.
If we could set something up with Algeria for £5,000 a person, that's great. But we weren't going to waste £750 million sending no one
there. We'll never know,
Andy. That's ridiculous.
Well, are you confident? How confident are you that one in, one out will work?
I'm far more confident than any Rwanda scheme would work. Because the numbers are going to be much higher for a start. If this works, then the people being sent back will be an indication that we're sending people back.
But what number, what is a significant percentage? I mean, you'd agree, 50 in a week where approximately 5,000 come over is not going to cut it, is it? So what would you suggest?
It's not a big number at all. It's the deterrent factor you keep banging on about, isn't it? It's more than nothing at all. And actually, they can run, potentially the numbers will ramp up.
Enjoy speaking with you. Have yourself a safe day. Andy, thank you. Coming up after the news, 1 in 3 GP visits still not face-to-face. The rate hits the highest proportion since COVID. Health Secretary Wes Streeting said back in March...
I'm not pretending I've fixed everything in the first 9 months. There is so much more to do. We are delivering what we said. Under Labour, the NHS has turned a corner, is beginning to move in the right direction.
Well, not if you want a face-to-face appointment, it's not. 7:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
Migrants arriving in the UK on small boats could be detained and returned to France from this morning. A pilot of the government's one-in, one-out exchange is starting with Britain to take asylum seekers with ties here. The aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing to cause disruption across northern parts of the UK. ScotRail says it's expecting services to be affected until around 4 o'clock this afternoon because of fallen trees and debris. Police are still looking for dozens of suspected rioters a year after disorder broke out across the country. Officers who've already charged more than 1,100 people are setting up a website with the details of about 40 suspects. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most, heavier rain across central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Phil, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply at gambleaware.org.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Drop up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours to I. Inspect tire your pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. Safe trip begins with T.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33. Back to your calls on the one in, one out. And just to remind you, in about just under 20 minutes, I would imagine, we'll have the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, telling us more on that. Into the world of business. And every political party likes to say it's the party of business. The Conservatives probably could rightly lay claim to that. Before the general election, Labour worked very hard to make sure and to show that they thought they could be the party of business. But on the front page of City AM, well, there's a new candidate. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, will identify them now. Morning, Christian. Which party is it?
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, we spoke to Kemi Badenoch about a month ago, and she insisted that the Conservatives, as you put it, is the party of business. Before the election, Rachel Reeves said that Labour would be the most pro-business government this country has ever had. Not sure that's quite how it's panned out. Our monthly polling of the British public, of voters, shows that actually, by a considerable margin, Brits now identify Reform as the party of business. Now, in the same poll, a huge majority, I'm encouraged to see, a huge majority said that support for business is incredibly important. And in this poll, we asked voters which party they now consider to be the party of business. And Reform came out on top. Labour, it should be said, came bottom of the pack. Lower than any other party. The Conservatives followed Reform, followed, in fact, by the Lib Dems. Yeah, Labour not doing very well there at all. We spoke to Richard Tice, who leads on economic policy for Reform. He says that their message to particularly small business is cutting through. They want to raise the threshold at which a business starts paying VAT to 150 grand. He says that their pledge to abolish net zero is also having an impact. So although yesterday Nigel Farage was talking very much about law and order, I'm sure that strategists will be intrigued by this latest polling showing their standing among some parts, at least, of the business community.
We're a nation that loves to shop, Christian.
We are, and it seems that we particularly enjoy doing it in Europe. In Europe, on the continent, Brits and other tourists can enjoy VAT-free shopping. It's an arrangement that used to exist for tourists coming to the UK, but Rishi Sunak scrapped it in a bid to raise a bit of post-pandemic money. The hospitality, tourism, leisure industry in the UK is apoplectic at this, says that we are shooting ourselves in the foot. And to give a little demonstration of what sort of numbers are at stake, I think Brits spent about £743 million shopping on VAT-free goods on the continent last year. So obviously we can't resist a bargain. A little trip to the shops perhaps when we're on our summer holidays. But it's an arrangement that used to exist here in the UK, doesn't anymore. And there's a long-running campaign among retailers and hospitality leaders to try and reinstate it. But I don't fancy their chances.
Up and away for many of the banks and lending institutions on the back of the so-called car selling scandal. What lies behind that?
Well, one, whilst the banks are going to have to pay out and that there will be a form of redress, it wasn't at the upper end. There was talk that had the ruling been harsher or tighter against the banks' favours, it could have been a sort of £40 billion pot that the banks were going to be on the hook for. It's going to be considerably less than that. And the consequence of that yesterday is that bank shares shot up. Lloyds Banking Group bolstered its value on the market by about $3.5 billion. Close Brothers, which is a lender, not a high street lender, but very much got their fingers in a lot of finance arrangements, and that has taken an absolute pasting, went up about £120 million in value. Barclays up 2% by about $1 billion. All in all, the FTSE's big five banks added about $7.5 billion to their market value yesterday. That's despite the fact that there will be payouts. They're just not going to be as tough as people had feared.
And finally, staying with the motor sector, why has Donald Trump got Jaguar or Jaguar Land Rover in his sights?
Well, now, do you know who Sydney Sweeney is, Nick?
Yes, this is the woman who's in a controversy over the jeans advert.
That's right. I mean, you and I spent some time discussing jeans.
I spent some time trying to get out of jeans, but there we go. I'm trying to get them on and trying to get out. That's the biggest challenge for me, but do go on.
Well, Donald Trump has discovered that Sydney Sweeney is a registered Republican. She is behind a campaign, a billboard and social media campaign in the US for jeans. She's outed herself as a Republican, so Donald Trump has said that this is the greatest advert of all time. And in contrast, his point is to that sort of Lady Penelope-esque Jaguar pink rebrand that was trashed by so many people for being totally woke, in the words of a number of critics. And Donald Trump has said that that advert and that company, in fact, is a total disaster zone, the CEO who's just quit in disgrace. Well, not sure it was disgrace, but nevertheless, they've got a new boss of Jaguar, comes from the parent company Tata, will be taking over. I'm not sure you can expect to see one pulling up in front of the White House anytime soon.
Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM, thank you for that. Let's get on the social media and the text concerning one in, one out. Melin, SW3, that sounds like Wimbledon, isn't it? I always go mad about SW18. SW3, what's that going to be? I don't know, Knightsbridge or something. One in, one out. The country's not a nightclub. Sir Keir Starmer is pathetic. Mark says we need a third country like Rwanda. Oh, gosh, Andy will be furious. To get the message that if you come in illegally, you're never going to get asylum. Put into the camp, DNA fingerprints taken, and then sent off to another country. Kevin says if the one-in-one-out policy does work, Nigel Farage would be devastated. He'd have to find other people to demonise. More on that aspect of the story later. Alma, you will be the next caller on this. But at 7.39, let's go quickly to Greece, because hopes are fading for a British woman who vanished from a beach while her husband was asleep on the sunbed. We speak of Michelle Ann Joy Border, who's 59, and bring into the conversation Daphne Tollis, who's a journalist joining me from Greece. What's the latest, Daphne? Good morning.
Good morning from Greece. Indeed, it's a mysterious disappearance that has sparked alarm in Kavala, the region where the British woman went missing. That was on Friday. So apparently she was with her husband at the beach, and the husband fell asleep on a beach sunbed, and as soon as he woke up, she was not there. So now I spoke to the Greek Coast Guard, and last night the search and rescue at sea, the targeted search and rescue at sea, has paused. It's been more than 3 days that she's gone missing. So now they're still patrolling the area at land and at sea, but the targeted search and rescue has ceased. We still have no signs of what happened, but the only latest information that I got was that a sports instructor, summer sports instructor, said that he saw her. He saw a woman that resembles the woman, that she went swimming and she was somewhere deep in the sea, and he told her, like, don't go any further because it's already very deep. That's been reported, that she was in the sea. Now, her personal belongings were left behind at the sunbed.
Has the husband said anything, Daphne?
No, not so far. And he's apparently reportedly of Greek origin. That's what the authorities also told me, is Greek. So now she woke up, he didn't find her there. He went asking around the beach bar where they were sitting. There's a silver alert issued as well, a notice, which is broadcast on TV stations, social media platforms, on the radio, which describes
the circumstances. Daphne Tollis, thank you. Comprehensive report there from Daphne, joining us, journalist based in Greece. That is very concerning, isn't it? So it is reported she left behind her belongings by her beach chair. It is reported she was seen going into quite deep water. Let's hope all those pointers are wrong and this woman is found somewhere on the island. Thanks for your input on that. 7:42, Alma in Guildford. One in, one out. What chance of success? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm sorry, I think that all the things that we're deciding to do are totally ineffectual. I've got a brilliant idea.
Ah, stand by.
Scottish islands. We've got so many abandoned Scottish islands. I was watching a programme the other day on an island called Herta, which I'd never heard of.
Never touched it.
And there are whole stone villages up there, houses. And obviously water must have been laid on and people lived there, which is, I presume, in the 1800s.
Right.
Stick them up on Scottish islands and they won't be able to stand the weather.
Well, that's a bit brutal, isn't it?
I mean,
from freeze, what will they do all day?
Isn't it? Well, what do they do now? They wander around our streets. No, it's a deterrent.
Right.
It's a deterrent. Use our Scottish islands and put these people up there with sand, cement or whatever so they can build.
This makes you pretty angry, I sense, doesn't it, people arriving in this country, Alma?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does, because we're totally ineffectual at handling it, and I don't trust the French.
All righty. Well, that's a rather all-encompassing comment, isn't it? I'm sure many of them don't trust us, and probably quite rightly. Alma, thank you. I'm going to file that as an idea. I just keep it as an idea. Sean's in Tavistock. Good day, Sean.
Yeah, good day, Sean. Beautiful North Cornwall today, Nick. Beautiful, very fresh.
Oh, very nice too. Well done.
Question for Yvette Cooper.
Yes.
When it was counter-terrorism in the 80s, the big fear was Irish terrorists coming to the mainland, and they could get over and put sleeper cells everywhere, and they looked like you and me, Nick.
Right.
Now, we know we're at war with Islamic Jihad at the moment, globally.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys coming over are of a certain complexion and a certain religion. We know some of these may be infiltrated.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Mostly, yeah.
This is a counter-terrorism operation. We need to locate every single one of them, put them in a secure area, and absolutely interrogate them, find out what the hell, who they are and what they're doing over here.
It's way beyond that, though, isn't it, Sean? There's 25,000 in this year alone.
That's the problem. And Rwanda was working it because he went off to Ireland. He fled in fear of going to Rwanda when the flights were due to start. Rishi should have called that election later on and get those flights working. That would have worked. He was already working.
That's an interesting point. Do you think he'd have got them through the courts and the lawyers, though, lastly, Sean?
Well, the Supreme Court allowed it to go through, didn't it? Remember, the last stage was the Supreme Court, and they give it the sanction to go ahead. The blockage came from people like Lord Aymer, who's now the Attorney General. The House of Lords kept blocking it.
Always enjoy speaking with you, Sean. Thank you for reminding us about what many see as the success in that it totally changed the landscape. And you're absolutely right. People went to Ireland rather than risk coming here because they thought they might end up in Rwanda. Sean, have yourself a safe day. Coming up after the news, we hope to be speaking with the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper. She had this to say about the one-in, one-out deal with me last month.
This is a pilot and we will develop it over time, but that principle, that fundamental change is really important.
So it could be fewer than 50 if the number's not fixed?
Well, we will start this and we will grow this.
Let's see if we get better answers after this. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A pilot of the UK's one-in, one-out migrant return deal with France has come into force for the first time. Engineers are working to fix power cuts and clear debris from railway lines after Storm Floris. And dozens of suspects are still wanted by police over disorder that broke out across the UK last summer. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most, heavier rain in central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Stoke Newington High Street remains closed in both directions because of an ongoing police investigation. It's closed at Amherst Road. Also, the delays continue on the A12 northbound up to junction 15 at 3 Mile Hill. Just after the junction, there's been an accident and one lane is closed for recovery. Also, delays continue on the North Circular Road westbound from Henley's Corner to the Brent Cross flyover. It's all down to an accident where one lane is closed. On the underground, severe delays on both the Piccadilly and Bakerloo lines, and also minor delays on the District line. And now there are problems for Great Western Railway. They're delayed between Paddington and Reading.
This is LBC.
Morrison's MoreCard customers. Play our Wheel of Prizes game in the MoreCard app today. Spend just £10 in-store or online to unlock a spin. Win big prizes like a year's free shopping worth a whopping £3,000. To free goodies like our classic Market Street donuts. Play now on the MoreCard app.
Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
MoreCard app required. 18 plus. Excludes Morrison's Daily, Deliveroo and Amazon. T's and C's apply. See online for details. End 24th of August.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Train to Peckham, kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Full, that's a steal of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater, no cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply at gambleaware.org.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you, A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 10 minutes before 8, waiting for the Home Secretary to come to our Westminster studio. So, Mike in Perth, I apologise in advance if I had to let you go fairly quickly, but what chance of success do you give one in, one out? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello,
I just want to make a quick couple of points.
Yeah.
Say the one in gets here and he's allowed to come here. And he turns round and says, now, he says, I've got a wife and six children. Obviously, they have to come here as well.
Yep.
So there's your one in,
yep,
turned into eight in.
Yep, that's a very good
second point.
Yep.
Who determines that they should be allowed to come here? Is it the French or is it determined? And where are they going to get the evidence that he's allowed to come here?
Well, again, these are questions that I assure you I shall put to the Home Secretary. And while we await, indeed, her arrival and her answers, what chances of success do you give it, Mike?
Absolutely none. Absolutely none.
You don't think it'll work at all? All right, Mike, I think you've given one very good point about family members, and I had already got the other idea, how is it to be determined, and we will put those to the Home Secretary when we manage to get hold of her. Mike, thank you, Mike in Perth, Mike in Poole. You're second, Mike in second. On you go. What can you tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, did you actually read the Rwanda exchange, the programme itself?
I only read newspaper praises of it. I won't pretend that I read the entire court document. Hansard document, no.
Yeah, that's not helpful because it was indeed just an exchange programme. And the Rwanda programme was based on that we give them a fully abled person.
Right.
And in exchange, we got a disabled, less abled person that would put more pressure on our NHS.
I don't recall that aspect. I tell you what, we're going to research that. I promise you I shall return to it. I apologise in advance, but I have got the opportunity to speak to the Home Secretary, who can answer so many of these questions. So, Mike, thank you for the point you make. Let's go to Home Secretary Yvette Cooper, who joins me now from our Westminster studio. Thank you very much for coming on, Home Secretary. How will this one in, one out work, and what is your goal? What do you hope to get the numbers to? Good morning.
Good morning. So the treaty is being laid today alongside the immigration rules that will underpin it. They come into force tomorrow. And that means we will then start detaining people within a matter of days. And people who arrive on a small boat can then be detained immediately on arrival and held in detention until they are returned to France. In exchange, on a one-for-one basis, those who apply lawfully in France, who go through security checks, can be transferred to the UK. This is a pilot programme, so it will start with the numbers being lower and then build up. But of course, we want to expand it, but we want to trial those systems. But I think that the principle is the right one, which is, frankly, people who arrive illegally should be being returned. People who arrive through a lawful process and apply and go through security checks can be transferred in exchange.
But I ask, what is your ambition to get the number two Home Secretary?
So we're not setting out a number at this stage for a couple of reasons. First of all, as I've said, we will start with the numbers being lower, and then we want to increase it as much as possible.
But what does that
and
mean?
We want to substantially increase it, but we have not fixed a final version, a final number for the scheme. And secondly, because what we don't want to do is provide operational details about how many people each week or at different days and different timings that we know, frankly, criminal gangs will then just use and exploit in order to manage their crossings and in order to do their advertising. What we will do is update people with regular information about the number of returns that are taking place. But look, frankly, no one should be making these dangerous boat crossings, right. So we want to be able to expand it as much as possible.
You mentioned the security checks. Mm. Who will be conducting those and how?
So the UK will do the security checks on people who apply.
In France?
In France, they will have to have biometrics done in France.
So where will the teams will be based?
So, again, I'm not going to give the operational details at this point.
Well, I don't want the precise postcode, but I mean, are they going to be at the Calais, the port we have at Calais? Where will they be?
No, so we don't want this to be drawing people to northern France. Frankly, we want people moving away from northern France. So what will happen is people will be able to apply online. We will then do assessments for eligibility and prioritisation. And the priorities will be those who are have a connection to the UK, those who are most likely to be genuine refugees, and also those who are most likely to be targeted by the criminal smuggler gangs. And then those who are then deemed eligible will then have to go through biometric checks. They will have
who
their
will
biometrics.
Do those checks? The biometrics. Authorities?
No, the biometrics will be done by the UK authorities,
where?
But in France. They will be done in France.
So I ask again, where? Where will that happen?
Understand that you want me to describe the precise location, and I'm not going to do that for operational reasons.
But you have
reasons.
Got premises, haven't
but
we?
Yes, we do. We already do, Nick, we already do biometric checks in France. We already have processes, we have centres where biometrics can be done in France, and that will continue, because that we do that normally with visa processes.
So someone goes through this centre, mm-hmm. Which we're not allowed to know the location. They come legally to the United Kingdom. We then discover that they have five or six family members. Do they all then have rights to come to the United Kingdom?
So the family, they will need to apply with their family as part of the application process. And so families can apply as part of the application
process. So it could be one in, one out, six in?
No, well, that would count in terms of the number of people arriving. That would be the number of people.
So it will never be more than one person coming and will not be able to bring other members of their family. One becomes six.
So it will be one for one in terms of the... So if a family of four apply, then they would be transferred in response to four people being returned to France and being removed.
And how confident are you that the support and the mutual working that is required from the French will be forthcoming?
Well, 6 months ago, people said this was impossible for us to do this. And certainly we know previous governments have attempted to get agreements with France and never done so. But we've been working very closely with the French government, and they have signed this treaty. It also has the support of other European countries. I think this is very important. And also alongside this, France have also agreed to do something they previously refused to do, which was to change their maritime rules so that they can intervene in French waters, actually prevent the boat crossings from French waters in the first place. So this is the result of very extensive cooperation between the UK and France, what the Prime Minister's called a grown-up diplomacy, because in order to strengthen our border security, we need to work with the other countries who are on the other side of those borders in order to do that.
And when do you imagine the first returns will take place?
Well, the first detentions we want to take place in a matter of days,
right.
And then we will be referring those cases immediately to France. There are then the processes that we need to work through, and we are ready to resist any legal challenge that comes forward as well. But we do want to see returns taking place in a matter of weeks, but we will need to work those processes through.
So they will be taking place in August?
So again, we need to work those processes through, but we want to see the returns themselves take place as swiftly as possible.
You can't
bear
say
in
August.
Mind, bear in mind, people will be detained until they are returned,
but
so they will remain
to say August,
in detention.
Then,
well, as I said, we want this to be in a matter of weeks. Some of those cases we hope will be able to take place very quickly. In other cases, we are ready to resist legal challenges, which we've seen take place before.
As Home Secretary, there's many matters on your brief, not least as one back home here in the United Kingdom and indeed London. It's thought up to 1,000 people or more could be taking part in a Palestine action protest this weekend in London. What's your message to them?
Well, the prescribing process is based on very extensive security advice and security assessments to me as Home Secretary, which I have to take immensely seriously. That security assessment looks at the violent attacks, injuries, attacks on national security infrastructure, and also includes assessment and some really troubling information about that refers to future attack planning as well. That's the basis on which this organisation has been prescribed. And let's be clear, this is a narrow organisation. This is not about protesting about Palestine, well, which huge numbers of people lawfully do. I understand there are people who don't really know the details of this organisation, who may be thinking about protesting, but who don't know. What I would say to them is more information is likely to be revealed about this organisation as various trials go through the legal system. And really, this is not a non-violent organisation.
Let's look at the Times newspaper. Their leader column says the Prime Minister's blundering intervention on Palestinian statehood has fueled some of this dissent or unrest. And they also point to a senior member of Hamas saying the initiative by several countries to recognise a Palestinian state is one of the fruits of October the 7th. How do you feel in the light of that?
Let's be clear, what we've seen, the horrendous scenes in the Middle East.
And the reward is by the United Kingdom to recognise Palestine in less than 40 days.
I strongly disagree with that assessment.
I
strongly disagree with that assessment. The Prime Minister has rightly set out the pathway for recognising a Palestinian state, which has really been it's the inalienable right of the Palestinian people. And we always said, the Labour Party has always said, that we would... We wanted to be able to do that recognition, and we wanted to be able to set out a pathway to do so.
So it will go
we
ahead.
Have set
recognition
out,
will go ahead. It will be a fruit of October the 7th.
We have set out conditions to be able to be assessed, and we have also been clear that that recognition does not include and will never include recognition of Hamas, who are a barbaric terrorist organisation and who need to be excluded from this process.
Lastly, can you help us with this story concerning the background of people who arrive in this country are charged with serious crime. Sir Keir Starmer's told police to be as transparent as possible, the Prime Minister's spokesman adding, "We've always said and continue to say that transparency is important." Meanwhile, a case allegedly involving two asylum seekers in Warwickshire, the police force has defended his approach, saying it follows national guidance as to not revealing identity. You are the Home Secretary. Which is the correct course or path to tread?
We want to see greater transparency. We think it's important. Let me give you an example. The recent cases that we had on national security and terrorism cases where the police released the fact that the suspects were Iranian at the point at which they arrested them. The Crown Prosecution Service released the fact that those who were being charged, what their immigration and asylum status was at the point of charge. So we know it is possible to provide more information. We do think there should be greater transparency, but that's why we have asked the Law Commission to accelerate its review into what information can be provided, especially, you know, if there are court cases or trials underway, so that we've got that proper advice and information. And we are also working with the College of Policing on revising the guidance, because we do think more information should be provided.
So lastly, Warwickshire Police should have given more when they had the opportunity, Home Secretary.
Ultimately, this is operational decisions for the police and Crown Prosecution Service in individual cases.
Want transparency. I mean, there's only one way to interpret that, Home Secretary, which is Warwickshire should have given more.
But what we're trying to want to do is to change the guidance and to make sure that there is greater transparency. In any individual case, of course, there will be operational decisions about when information can be released in a live investigation. We recognise that.
Yeah.
However, we do think that the guidance needs to change. We need the Law Commission assessment because we do think more transparency is needed.
I hope the pilot scheme works in the way you hope. You and your colleagues have worked too. Thank you for your time. Yvette Cooper, Home Secretary, appearing here on LBC. 2 minutes after 8, news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, authorities are to begin enforcing the one-in, one-out migrant return deal with France. The pilot will see the UK send people who've arrived in small boats back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to Britain. Critics say it won't apply to enough migrants to make any difference. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been speaking to Nick about the numbers involved.
We will start with the numbers being lower, and then we want to increase it as much as possible, and we want to substantially increase it, but we have not fixed a final version, a final number for the scheme. What we don't want to do is provide operational details about how many people each week or at different days and different timings that we know, frankly, criminal gangs will then just use and exploit.
Network Rail says its teams are working tirelessly to clear fallen trees from lines across Scotland. Thousands of people are still without power after Storm Floris hit yesterday with gusts of up to 90 miles per hour. Further wet and windy weather is forecast from tomorrow into Thursday. Around 40 people are still wanted by police a year after disorder broke out in the wake of the Southport murders. Officers say their determination to track them down is a warning to troublemakers not to repeat the unrest. They are setting up a website with suspects' details. Merseyside MP Ian Byrne says there cannot be a repeat of last summer's violence.
It is a worry about what you're seeing across the country at the moment. You know, you look at what's happening in Epping and, you know, there's an undoubted move by people to try and destabilise the country and communities. And I just hope people just obviously stick together.
New guidelines are being introduced to stop people with a violent history from accessing guns. They have been issued in response to concerns raised by coroners after shootings, including the Kiam attack in Plymouth in 2021. Police will interview partners and carry out additional checks before issuing a firearms licence. Health chiefs have raised concerns about people regaining weight after using jabs like Wegovy and Mounjaro. The watchdog NICE says patients should be offered structured advice and follow-up care. Most people taking the jabs in the UK are getting them privately, so aren't necessarily getting ongoing support. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 91.28. It closed up 59 yesterday. Yesterday, the pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places. A bit calmer this morning, but still some heavy rain across central and northern areas. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 6 minutes after eight on Tuesday, August the 5th, the row goes on over what we should or should or could or couldn't know about people arriving in this country and then charged with serious crimes. Fairly unequivocal approach of the Home Secretary on this, the row between the police and political figures as well. We'll give you the latest background and then, of course, take your views. In other political news,
Reform's new prison czar has opened the door to a fresh debate about the death penalty. That's despite Nigel Farage ruling it out. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive.
To health matters, one in three GP appointments are not face-to-face, the highest proportion since the COVID pandemic. How happy are you with that? Dr. Steve Taylor is a GP based in Manchester.
The reality is that's the changing way that we work. And for some consultations, I mean, clearly not all, if we give people the choice, many choose telephone, some choose text consultations.
Plus, should we shield children from the horrors of war in literature and in children's books? the best-selling Sir Michael Morpurgo, responsible for works such as... That's the main theme from the movie War Horse, says no. Children's books should not shrink from the horrors of war, but do them in a way that's educational and informative. How are you trying to shield your children from that, particularly as well, sometimes now, currently, from news bulletins of two?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Knowledge is power. Who said that? I think it was Sir Francis Bacon, but don't quote me. Don't quote me on the quote. I think it was Sir Francis Bacon who once said, knowledge is power. Knowledge isn't necessarily power in this instance, but it is certainly helpful, and surely there is a very valid argument that if we are to avoid horrific flare-up of violence as we witnessed in the so-called summer riots of last year, then it is helpful, and you'll hear the Home Secretary on this in just a moment and cite a case involving some Iranians, people of Iranian origin, it is helpful to let us know. Now, this all focuses on the supposed or alleged incidents involving two people who are believed to be Afghanistan asylum seekers and allegedly taking part in the rape of a 12-year-old girl, which obviously has inflamed tensions there. And the initial reaction from the Warwickshire Police to tell local councillors and others in other interested parties not to release the background for fear of inflaming local tensions. Always be very, very nervous. If there's anything that all these years in journalism have taught me, and there's not very much, it's simply this. Be very aware of any attempt to censor information. It never normally works. Truth will out. And now this story is still bouncing around. The Prime Minister... putting pressure, as the front page of one paper says, putting pressure now on police chiefs to release more information, to be as transparent as possible, to quote his words. Well, within the last 10, 15 minutes of the show, here's Home Secretary Yvette Cooper responding to that.
We want to see greater transparency. We think it's important. Let me give you an example. The recent cases that we had on national security and terrorism cases where the police released the fact that the suspects were Iranian at the point at which they arrested them. The Crown Prosecution Service released the fact that those who were being charged, what their immigration and asylum status was at the point of charge. So we know it is possible to provide more information. We do think there should be greater transparency, but that's why we have asked the Law Commission to accelerate its review into what information can be provided, especially, you know, if there are court cases or trials underway, so that we've got that proper advice and information. And we are also working with the College of Policing on revising the guidance, because we do think more information should be provided.
So lastly, Warwickshire Police should have given more when they had the opportunity, Home Secretary.
Ultimately, this is operational decisions for the police and Crown Prosecution Service in individual cases.
We want transparency. I mean, there's only one way to interpret that, Home Secretary, which is Warwickshire should have given more.
But what we're trying to want to do is to change the guidance and to make sure that there is greater transparency. In any individual case, of course, there will be operational decisions about when information can be released in a live investigation. We recognise that. Yeah. However, we do think that the guidance needs to change. We need the Law Commission assessment, because we do think more transparency is needed.
Now, this debate has been raging for some time, not least, of course, back to the Southport murders of summer of last year. Three young girls lost their lives taking part in a Taylor Swift-themed dance class. And I spoke with the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, the nation's number one police officer, Sir Mark Rowley, about this in January. And he talked and blamed pre-existing contempt of court laws for the lack of transparency.
So it's frustrating, but it is the law. So we shouldn't criticise CPS for insisting on the law. Now, there are countries where contempt of court laws are nowhere near this and you're able to talk more freely. But in our legal system, if the police or CPS had said loads more, there is a risk it would have undermined the trial. And that's... So I can understand that situation. I can understand that advice. I mean, the Prime Minister's talked about doing reviews. I know the Law Commissioner looking at the law of contempt of court. I think in today's modern social media age where rumour goes so quickly, it's good that people are looking at it. I think it's good there's going to be a review of a whole range of things around this, and it's good that people are looking at the law on contempt of court. I think it'd be great if we can have changes that mean that more information can be shared earlier, because I think it today's social media world generates rumour and debate, yes, and sometimes contention. So I think we do need changes.
A reference there to Chief Constable of Merseyside Police Serena Kennedy, 12 after 8. Let's bring to the conversation first Dr. Nick McCarroll, who's Senior Lecturer at Glasgow Caledonian University, specialising in police guidance and powers, and joining me now. Well, there seems to be a discussion here. I wouldn't say that it's a contretemps, a discussion between the two officers. Which one do you favour, the police who are urging caution or the Prime Minister who's urging transparency? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I think there's a balance to be struck. I would generally be in favour of caution, and it's not simply a purely legal issue. I think it's about how law interacts with a number of different factors. What we have in the criminal justice system is a balance between people's rights and the rights of society, and the balance between that in terms of criminal investigation often focuses down on when somebody is being investigated for a crime. And the problem is that I heard Vivette Cooper mention the distinction, is if somebody is charged with a criminal act, things are different. Contempt of court laws are different and human rights laws are different. Because somebody is charged, then the general consensus is somebody's information is released when they're charged with a criminal offence. The exception to that, as we saw partly in the Southport case last year, is if somebody's under 18, then their name's not released once they're charged.
But, Doctor, how are we to stop misinformation spreading?
Yeah, if somebody's... Well, that's an issue as well about misinformation. But if somebody's investigated, the general legal consensus is that somebody's name is not released if they're investigated. Now, somebody's name is different from somebody's ethnicity, but there could be a case, the police might say, and the authorities, it's not just the police, the prosecuting authorities might say, is if you reveal somebody's ethnicity, then it does identify them, particularly in a society, a community, where there are smaller groups than the breadth of the community.
But if we take the example the Home Secretary cited of the two the people of Iranian origin, that was positively helpful that everyone knew where we stood, surely.
Yeah, and terrorism charges are different in many ways. The laws surrounding terrorism, the rights that somebody has when they're being investigated under terrorism laws are slightly different than other criminal offences. Not bizarrely, but the way in which the law about investigation is dictated was that, you remember a few years ago, the Cliff Richard case, when he was identified as being, yes, under police investigation for criminal offences, and he succeeded in gaining significant damages from the BBC for revealing information about him. So media, as you'll know yourself, the media are reluctant to involve themselves in cases where they could be involved in criminal cases. So the police are following that lead to some extent as well in terms of that anonymity idea.
Doctor, thanks for your time. Dr. Nick McCarroll, your Senior Lecturer in Law at Glasgow Caledonian University. Listening to that, Chris Stokel-Walker is a journalist and author specialising in digital culture. And this is the key, isn't it? Because when Sir Keir Starmer first started work, when Yvette Cooper first started work, when I first started work, there was no such thing as social media. And that's really changed the landscape, hasn't it, Chris? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, it has. That is the thing that is filling the vacuum, I suppose, in terms of information for these sorts of cases. And unfortunately, it is populated by people who don't know the rules around the contempt of court and don't know their media law and wonder why we are unable to talk about this. So I think it is incumbent on the police to try and maybe move a little bit closer towards them in terms of how much they feel comfortable disclosing while still remaining within those rules, if we aren't going to redraw the contempt of court laws. And I think that would be incredibly tricky. But then there is also another aspect to this, which is that we are posting these things on platforms, and those platforms do bear some responsibility, I think, for trying to help police that conversation and to stop this sort of stuff from spreading in a really bad way. So I would suggest that perhaps they could do a little bit more. At the minute, they are pretty agnostic to stepping in on any of this sort of stuff because they say it isn't our problem. We are just passing through that information. But the reality is that actually they are having to deal with the consequences of this, and so they should try maybe proactively to step in here as well.
Chris, you're right. A lot of people on social media don't have the journalistic training that you and I have and the knowledge of contempt laws. But can I also put to you, a lot of them wouldn't be interested anyway. Many, not all, many are there to stir up trouble in any way they shape, any shape or form they can see.
Indeed, and this is part of the problem, which is that social media loves that sort of stuff. It is a massive megaphone for that. It is based on an attention economy, and so whatever it is that will sell attention will end up leading the conversation on social media. So I think, you know, there is an element here where this is always going to be the case. I do think that it has been amplified in many ways by social media, because if you think back to when you were saying in a pre-social media age, you may well have had people pontificating about this sort of stuff, but it would have been around the pub, and truthfully, it probably would have only spread within a one-table circumference or something like that. Now it is much more significant and much more wider in terms of what they say.
Chris Stokel-Walker is a journalist and author specialising in these matters. We'll take your calls on that. I have told you yesterday, we do have the right. We do have the, unless it compromise a case, of course, and there are, I can see that. But in the instance of some of the issues and cases we're talking about, we do have the right to know. And, of course, we have now, this is your chance to respond to, you've heard more about One In, One Out, including some of the questions that you put concerning exactly how will it be done, what of family members. So we will take your responses on that. I know we did it in the first hour, but you've had the Home Secretary now. The 8:15 LBC News headlines. It'll late to those. Thomas Watts.
Migrants arriving in the UK on small boats could be detained and returned to France from today. The aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing to cause disruption across northern parts of the UK, and police are still looking for dozens of suspected rioters a year after the Southport disorder. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places, with heavy rain in central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 17 at Maple Cross to 16 at the M40. There are delays of about 40 minutes, and that's because of a load of debris across the road. In Stoke Newington, the High Street, which is part of the A10, remains closed both ways, and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. Slow in Greenwich on the A2 Blackheath Road westbound up to the Lewisham Road junction, and that's because of the temporary lights. On the Underground, there are severe delays still on the Bakerloo and District lines. Also, the Piccadilly line suffering with severe delays because the overnight works finished late at Acton Town. And Elizabeth line and also Great Western Railway services are delayed between Reading and Paddington.
LBC.
I'd never driven electric before, but wow, MG's EV range blew me away. And when I heard I could save up to £2,500, I was sold. Combining the MG EV car grant and £1,000 test drive discount, save up to £2,500 on a brand new MG EV from MG, Autocar's best manufacturer 2025. Book your test drive today at mg.co.uk. Registered by September 30th, includes £1,000 test drive discount plus £1,500 EV car grant. Retail and affinity customers only. Excludes Cyberster and MGIM range.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Paul Abrahams, Principal Cosmetic Dentist at Smarmore Dental Care, St John's Wood. I refer my implant patients to Darwin and Tanner and consider them to be an extension of my fabulous team. I trust the team at Darwin and Tanner to help me give my patients the smile they've always wanted.
A team of dental experts second to none, armed with the very latest in dental implant knowledge, technology and techniques. Visit darwinandtanner.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:21. This, I've realised now, of course, is your first opportunity to respond to what you've heard more about this one in, one out deal. And I asked whether it's one big con. What did we learn? Well, that they hope the people will start going back by, although you couldn't hold it to that, by August. Certainly the detentions will start within days. The people will need to be processed. They'll need to apply online. biometrics checks will take place, and then the people who seek to gain entry to this country will then have to report to some kind of location in France, as yet undisclosed. I think they probably will never disclose, because you wouldn't tell me where it was. And the idea put forward, the checks then will be done, and if you're approved, the idea that was a caller made, Mike asked, what about family members? So, for the purpose of debate, I'm allowed in, and then I decide I want to bring my wife and three children and an uncle. Well, that will all count against that tally of 50. This is a little of what you say now that you've heard more from the Home Secretary. Hugh says, the Home Secretary said in your interview, one-in, one-out policy must be made online. Are there computers being made available to them, as I thought they were destitute and many were fleeing from torture? Whether there are charities who will do it, I don't know, Hugh. Gary in Coventry, it's not one-in, one-out, as you have two in, one illegal and one vetted and one out. Therefore, say there were 25,000 illegal immigrants over 6 months, there would still be 25,000 immigrants over the same period, albeit vetted this time. It will make no difference. Vijay says, what a load of twaddle from the Home Secretary, but truthfully, I didn't expect anything else. My goodness me, none of you in support here. John in Chelmsford, why does she come on the radio? She doesn't answer any questions. She was actually quite insulting to listeners. We might pick up on more on that, and, of course, this row that's going on between Number 10 and some of police forces and services up and down about the amount of information that we provide. But staying on that theme, Reform UK, and I think it's fair to say that they are in some ways seeking to make political ground over the confusion up in Warwickshire and elsewhere. Reform UK has revealed its new prisons czar, Vanessa Frake. Former head of security at Wormwood Scrubs, oversaw the imprisonment of Rose West and Myra Hindley. You'll have to ask your grandparents about that. And she is indeed a colourful character. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has been speaking with her and joins us now with this report. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, Nigel Farage's Reform Party might be doing very well in the polls, but it's fair to say they're quite light on policy, and that's exactly what Nigel Farage is trying to focus on over the summer. He's trying to beef up his team. And you mentioned about the policing announcement that he made yesterday when I was asking him, do you think it is right that people should be releasing information, the police should be releasing information about someone's immigration status, about their address, about their ethnicity, when they are charged with an offence? And he said, yes, absolutely. So that's leading all of the papers and bulletins today. So over the summer, Reform UK trying to focus on law and order, on crime policing, building up a real team of experts, they say, to try and help them come up with ideas about what they would actually do if they got into power. And like you say, one of those was revealed yesterday to be Vanessa Frake. She's a former prison officer. She's been brought in to try and boost their prison and justice policy. Like you said, she was the former head of security at HMP Wormwood. She's got decades of experience in the system, but it was a very quick process. She told me, actually, she was only called up by the party on Thursday.
It has been a manic few days, I won't lie there. Last Thursday. Obviously, there's been to and fro in all weekend. And, you know, they asked me straight out, would I be prepared to come on the task force and assist, you know, Colin Sutton and others about their law and order bill?
So it's all moving very quickly for people like Vanessa Frake. Four days and you're back in Reform.
Exhaustive recruitment. I thought they were going to go into deep background checks given some of the issues of the past,
well,
Natasha.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to ask about that one. But yes, clearly less vetted. I spoke to her yesterday about her old job overseeing prisoners, like you said, like Rose West, Myra Hindley, and actually for the one for the younger generations, Pete Doherty.
Ah.
I looked after Rose West for about 4 or 5 months. And, you know, the woman's a typical psychopath. She has absolutely no emotional intelligence. People who are of that ilk, they don't have it tattooed on their forehead, and that is why they are psychopaths. At the end of the day, they're nobody special. They're prisoners. Sometimes you get celebrities in and they think that they're a bit special. He basically just flouted his notoriety to other prisoners, signing autographs And then I walked into Scrubs one day, I think it was at a weekend, and there was a big picture of him smoking a joint with prisoners taking pictures on mobile phones.
She also told me that she won't be afraid to have frank discussions. Well, you're going to get that when you're in Reform, aren't you? And that her and the party might not always agree on everything. And one of those that many Reform MPs want to see looked at again is the death penalty. So I asked her again, would she be willing to look at this? Nigel Farage has said repeatedly he doesn't want to open that door, but she has said she'll have another look.
I'm more than happy to discuss the death penalty, but You know, if you'd have asked me that question 20 years ago, I'd have said, absolutely, no hesitation, I support the death penalty. But, you know, a lot of has changed over the years with convictions being unsafe. And is it really a deterrent? Is it a deterrent in the United States, in the states that have the death penalty? No, it's not. I'd much rather those people spent whatever life they have behind bars. I'm open to discussion, but I am not an advocate of it.
Another reform names who do want the party to have a look at it, David Bull, the new party chairman, Lee Anderson, one of the party's five MPs, has long called for this, but Farage has called, basically said that given examples of miscarriage of justice, he says, I don't think I could ever support it, but this is a conscience issue. So I think, Nick, it just goes to show, setting up a party, expanding your reach, even with a vetting process of 4 days, is going to be a pretty hard task. There's always going to be a lot of loud voices in the Reform Party which are going to prove a headache for Mr Farage. You saw it with Rupert Lowe, we saw it with Zia Youssef. I imagine it's not the last time we will see party splits like this in Reform.
Lastly, Natasha, this is all part of Crime Month or whatever it's called. Are we in the third week of crime initiatives from Reform?
I think it's a small boats week, isn't it? For the government.
So what
are
they looking for this woman to try and achieve? Do you have any sense of that?
I think what they're trying to do is trying to say, look, we've got people who've really worked in the system. We've got ideas for how we can make things better. The problem is, Nick, that obviously when you have, firstly, lots of people, you're not vetting them. They've not worked in the prison service for a long time. They've not got the ideas. They've not got quite as much sort of political nous. You're going to get these party splits. And we know Nigel Farage is a man that doesn't like other tall poppies coming up in his party. He doesn't like other people coming up with these big, bold ideas. And you are going to get a lot of people who are in the party disagreeing with each other. And at the moment, I think Nigel Farage wants to focus on crime. He rightly thinks this is something which lots of people out there, and I'm sure we get callers all day in, day out, saying that crime is a very important issue. He feels that government aren't doing enough on it. He wants to tap into it. But he's actually going to have to get some policies if he's going to get anybody to listen, I think.
LBC's Natasha Clark, political editor Natasha Clark, reporting. Now, let's get your responses to what you heard with the Home Secretary. Remy Desalu says, I've listened to the Home Secretary on the France Exchange programme. It seemed to me not a lot of deep thinking has gone on. Politicians dancing around, all to no real effect. There is such a thing as a doctrine of necessity, and such doctrines need to be engaged or things will unravel in society. Craig was also listening. Last time I checked, France isn't a war zone. These illegal immigrants should be arrested, detained and deported to their country of origin. 50 a week back to France is laughable. Two-tier Keir and his joke of a government are a total failure. John was also listening. At least the Home Secretary had tried to answer some of the questions on this occasion, but unfortunately when the answers came through they were even more misleading. I don't believe they've actually identified any location for this French processing site. I think they're just hoping that this stunt will make the headlines go away. John, anything but go away. I don't see that happening. We'll take more of your actions on that, particularly as we had a fairly in-depth conversation with the Home Secretary about that. But it's to matters, health matters, after the news. One in three GP appointments are not face-to-face, the highest proportion since the COVID pandemic. How frustrating do you find it? Well, for Mike Barlow, his wife Laura died last year from liver and bowel cancer following a misdiagnosis.
We didn't get the opportunity. When they diagnosed over the phone, they told me to pick up some painkillers. We believed the doctor, and that's what doctors are there for, to tell us what's wrong with my wife.
Plus, as a senior member of Hamas assesses Britain's contribution to Middle East diplomacy by recognising Palestine potentially next month, says the initiative by several countries to recognise a Palestinian state is one of the fruits of October the 7th. How did Home Secretary Yvette Cooper respond?
The Prime Minister has rightly set out the pathway for recognising a Palestinian state, which has really been it's the inalienable right of the Palestinian people. The Labour Party has always said that we wanted to be able to do that.
The fruits, that's the Hamas words, the fruits of that murder and detention of hostages recognised by the UK. It's 8:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. And the news headlines come from Thomas Watts.
A pilot of the UK's small boats return deal with France has come into force for the first time. Britain will be able to send people crossing the English Channel back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. Engineers are working to fix power cuts and clear debris from railway lines after Storm Floris. Scottish Government ministers held an emergency meeting last night to coordinate their response to the disruption. Dozens of suspects are still wanted by police over disorder that broke out across the UK last summer. A website is being set up in a fresh effort to track them down. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most with some heavier rain in central and northern parts, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's have a complete change of tack, change of approach and change of story and move to health matters. How satisfied are you otherwise when you try and speak with a GP face to face? Now, I know, as with so many other aspects of our lives, not least the workplace, education and so many other things, COVID had a massive impact. And the number of non-face-to-face, online or telephone appointments has obviously soared as a result of COVID. But would you have hoped that in some instances, not all, in some instances we could go back to face-to-face? Well, one in three GP appointments are not face-to-face, the highest proportion since the COVID pandemic, according to official analysis of NHS England data. Just a few figures. I'll try not to blitz you with too many. A third of appointments across the country in June were carried out either over the phone or online. That's up from a fraction over 30% a year earlier, 28% the year prior to that. Family doctors are saying remote consultations offers convenience and flexibility that many patients value, but the majority of appointments are still delivered face-to-face. As many as 4 in 10 appointments were carried out by phone or online during the pandemic, but that proportion fell considerably once people got back to work. The benefits or otherwise? Well, I want to hear your stories, but what about on the other side? What about being the doctor? Well, Chand Nagpal is a doctor and chaired the British Medical Association Council and GP Committee and is a council member of the Royal College of GPs. How much confidence do you and your colleagues have if you're trying to work out what my problem is online or down the phone? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great to be on your show, as always. And I think it's really important not to just look at these statistics and draw conclusions. I mean, the first thing is that it's not just the health service. The entire society has changed dramatically in the way people access services. When you look at online shopping, we don't look at the massive increase in online supermarket shopping or online shopping for goods and say that there's a problem, because a lot of this is about
you
people.
You do if you've lost your job as a result, of course, of stores closing.
Of course.
And that's at record numbers, Doctor.
Yes. I mean, there are consequences, but I'm talking about really the experience of those who do use online services. And I think the NHS is therefore part of a change in the way people want to access services in general. And so what's important is that people who are accessing the GP either on the phone or online are not doing it in a way that is obstructing those that do not wish to or cannot use. So I think what's important is to know whether those who do have telephone consultations are, first of all, having those consultations or online consultations appropriately. Is it medically appropriate? And secondly, are they satisfied with that access? And are there people who find that this is difficult? And are there systems in place to make sure that those who have difficulty don't get forced to use technology that they cannot use or don't wish to use? So I think that's what we need to really understand better.
Would you accept that in this particular equation, patients haven't had much say in it?
I think maybe initially, when we had COVID, there was a we were compelled to reduce the numbers of face-to-face consultations. In fact, compelled in terms of NHS England themselves advising us. But I think today, where we are now, I think that these statistics, I hope, certainly in my practice, reflect where people are in terms of how they want to access their GP practice. And it's not one where we are obstructing people. In fact, what I'm finding now, very strangely as a GP, is I've got significant numbers of patients who want to make telephone appointments. And I'm telling them that, in fact, I'd rather see you face to face. Because what people are finding is that telephone appointments are convenient. They can have a, rather than come to a GP practice, take time off work, wait in a waiting area, they can actually access their practice either online or on the phone, wherever they are, and it reduces their own time. But yes, I think it depends on the patient, but no one should be prevented from seeing a GP face-to-face.
I'm tempting fate here. I'm very lucky. I haven't had to see my GP since I can remember. But when I do see him or her, the first thing they do is take my blood pressure, take my weight. Well, you can't do that over the phone.
Absolutely. And in fact,
well,
that's
why...
isn't
that a basic failure?
Not every patient for every consultation needs to have their blood pressure and height checked. In fact, large numbers of consultations that I do telephone are, in fact, follow-up appointments. So I've seen the patient, I've examined them, I've done some tests, and then I need to relay the result of the test. So, in fact, it's not a choice between face-to-face or telephone. For the same patient, they've seen me, and I'm then ringing them up with the result. In the old days, they'd be making a GP appointment simply for a result. So I think, you know, beneath the statistics, there needs to be some understanding. But the really crucial thing is there are patients who have difficulty communicating on the phone. And there are many patients who really do need to be seen face-to-face for the reason. If someone's got a chest infection, you can't examine their chest over the phone. So that patient does need to be seen in the practice, examined physically, and treated appropriately. People with mental health problems need to often be seen face to face. It's more than a voice on the phone. It's a physical, non-verbal cues that are important. So,
and lastly, you're convinced, doctor, that a lot of people prefer telephone or online appointments.
My experience is that
I find that extraordinary.
I find it strange because I'm increasingly having to say to patients, I'd rather see you face-to-face. And I think that's what I'm saying. This, beneath these statistics, there are people who find it convenient. I think people who are busy, people who don't want to take time off work, people who don't even want to, you know, leave home and wait for an hour or 45 minutes, the round trip takes a while. And it depends on the reason for the consultation. If it is for a result, if it's for advice, if it's about I'm going to a country, I want to know which vaccines to have. Remember, these statistics reflect a range of reasons why people contact a GP surgery.
Grateful as ever for your time. Thank you, Doctor. John Nagpal, former chair of the British Medical Association Council and GP Committee, and a GP and a council member of the Royal College of GPs. Coming to you, Bob, just a couple of social media and texts. Karen in Bromley, I haven't seen a GP in person for a couple of years. To try and get an appointment, you have to complete a long e-consult form. Then they email you within 48 hours a phone appointment with a three-hour time slot, which might not be for a few weeks. Tom says, healthcare isn't bloody shopping. Literally, nobody I know prefers over-the-phone healthcare. Out of touch. Not seeing people face-to-face is a cop-out, pure and simple. Telephone appointments are classic double-handling. Bob in Romford. Bob, your reaction. Apparently people are happy with them. Are you? Good morning.
Yeah, I'm not too unhappy with them, but there's a factor that's not taken into this. My local blood testing clinic, because I was having seen my doctor, she said, you need a blood test.
You have an actual clinic that just does blood testing, do you?
Oh, there's loads of them.
Oh,
we've
right.
got lots of them. They give you an appointment, and you have to do that online, which is a bit of a faff. But,
right.
but the difficulty is the local one that I go to, which is just fairly is new, brand new. Hmm. Last month, I had 675 people not turn up for their appointments.
Right.
And my doctor had 60 people not turn up for appointments with her. face to face. They just didn't turn up.
Well, that's terrible. I'm not supporting that. But so you would agree you are happier then?
Yeah. I mean, if I really need, if I've got something mildly wrong with me, I dial 111. I don't phone the doctor.
And that works?
That works perfectly. Okay. If they think that you need a doctor, they'll get one phone you back and you speak with a proper doctor.
Right. And so people who are saying...
If you need an appointment,
yeah. They
organise one for you.
Okay. People who are saying they want to go back to face-to-face, just going back to the old days, yeah?
We're sitting, I've got a picture of that, sitting on a bench next to people coughing and sputtering. Do you really want to go back to that?
Well, not cough, they're coughing and spluttering, but the ability to physically see someone, I think, is helpful. But, Bob, I'm glad it's worked for you. John in Hertfordshire, try helping a 98-year-old neighbour via all this online bone issues. She was even told to buy her own special meter to provide her blood pressure. I felt awful for her, and I was just trying to help her. Gilbert's in Colchester. Gilbert, your story on this. Good morning.
Yeah, well, I need to regularly go to the GP practice because I have diabetes.
Right.
And I must say, it's great, actually. You know, if you have a minor issue, also for my daughter, for example, you know, it just, you upload a picture to this Anima system. They respond immediately. Sometimes it's something important and they say, come in. Other times it's
maybe
a minor issue.
Give me an example of that. Give me an example where they said, we think you better come in. Can you recall one?
Yeah, absolutely. So my daughter had a spot on her foot. I took a picture of it. I uploaded it. Like in a half an hour later, I got the message back. They said, come in. We have a look at it. And then, you know, we came in with a minor issue. No problem. I'm really happy with the Anima system. The processing since last year where you had to call up at 8 o'clock and you had to sit there on a long timeline. It was really difficult, and now it's so much more efficient. I'm really happy with it, so I think your listeners also should hear that.
All right. It's interesting. The people on the phones are saying they really like it. It's the people who are sending email messages and texts who are not so happy. Good, but I'm glad that your daughter is well. Yvonne says that doctor's not being clear. Majority of patients do not have a choice. 6 months and my cancer patient friend has not been offered any appointment with her GP. She went to A&E with the same pain she's been asking a practice for tests, and after checks, oh God, her cancer had returned and had spread. I'm very sorry to hear that, Yvonne. Do give her my best wishes. I'm just checking because these are medical matters and I can read them. Yes, I can. Lauren says, e-consults have transformed my incredibly useless surgery into an efficient machine. I love using the service. It's quick. I get what I need without having to sit on the phone or nag the secretaries. Mark is in Church Crookham. Mark, your story on this. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, it seems to me now that we can no longer just ring up and make an appointment to see the doctor. Those days have gone. And what you do now is you ring up and then the doctor decides whether he wishes to see you or whether you can have an appointment to see them.
But for Gilbert and Bob, it's working. I mean, they've just extolled the virtues here.
Well, I won't go into the details of it, but it's not particularly working for me, and it's definitely working for my eldest parents.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So I've gone down a route of private today, which my doctor tried to tell me, no, don't do it. It's a 2-week special cancer thing. You'll get seen quickly. Well, I just don't believe it. I'll just have to go privately and have stuff done.
Okay.
And that's very fortunate you can do that. But, you know, everybody can't. It's just crazy. You can no longer ring up and make an appointment.
And I'm with you because I'll let you get on, and I hope whatever you need to discover is positive. I hope everything goes well for you and you have good feedback, whether it's for you or your parents. But it may be, Mark, that you and I... I'm not listening to these other callers. We'll take more on that. Mark, safe driving. Coming up after the news. Now, Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood told the Commons in October the situation Labour inherited from the Conservative government meant she had no choice but to release some prisoners early.
The former Prime Minister knew he had to act. We had no choice but to bring forward the release point for some prisoners.
Now, there's been an independent review of prison capacity, and you will hear from the person who conducted that review right after these news headlines at 8:45 on LBC, read by Thomas Watts.
A pilot of the one-in, one-out deal to return small boat migrants to France has come into force. Travel disruption is continuing this morning after Storm Floris brought strong winds to Scotland, and police have renewed their appeal to find dozens of suspected rioters a year after widespread disorder. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most on a calmer morning, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays of about half an hour on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 17 at Maple Cross to 16 at the M40, and that's because of a load of debris across the road. The A1M's very busy going northbound up to junction 6 at Welling, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. In Stoke Newington, the High Street, the A10 remains closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation. On the Underground, there are now minor delays on the Bakerloo, District, Hammersmith and City and Piccadilly lines. Severe delays continue for the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Reading. It's all down to an ongoing investigation, which also means that Great Western Railway services are disrupted on that stretch. Delays of about half an hour.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Billing Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
How are you looking so fresh?
It's my new Samsung Galaxy Watch 8. It's got this thing called Running Coach, which creates custom training plans just for me. Oh, and that's our cue to pick up the pace.
What? This isn't fast enough. Oh.
Smash your fitness goals with a new Galaxy Watch 8. Buy today at Samsung.com. Requires smartphone on Android 11 or above with the latest version of the Samsung Health app.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
The doctor won't see you now, and apparently we're delighted. We're doing it instead online and over the phone. Almost 10 minutes before nine. Priscilla in Windsor, your reaction to this conversation. Priscilla, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Priscilla.
Well, I just have a question.
Ah, yes.
Am I the only person left in the country who doesn't have a computer?
I don't think you're quite, but you're heading towards it, Priscilla. Why will you not avail yourself of a computer, a whizzer?
I actually don't need one. Until this whole question of doctor's appointments came up, I really don't need one. I managed to live quite happily with a telephone.
Yes, yes. You don't order food online?
No.
No, you don't conduct your banking online? I know which way this is going to go, actually. You don't conduct your banking
online? Absolutely not.
So if you have, I don't know, children, grandchildren, friends, relatives, lovers, you always write letters?
No, but I don't have most of those things you've listed.
So it's just the lovers, is it?
I wish.
So you send postcards to your children or members of your family and letters, do you?
Well, I have no family.
Ah, right. Can I ask you a question?
You may.
Do you use a mobile phone?
No.
I think I loved you. This is fantastic. 2025, no mobile phone. So if I came to your house and said, what's your broadband supplier? What would you say to me, Priscilla?
I don't understand the question.
Oh, that's fantastic. What about your VPN?
I don't understand the question.
Oh, goodness me, I love it. Well, I hope you never need one, but if you do require a doctor, Priscilla, how do you go about it?
I pick up the telephone and I phone the surgery and I try and get an appointment.
And how easy or otherwise do you find that?
Well, so far, it really hasn't been a problem because touch wood and whistle, I'm healthy. Thank you for the whistle.
That's right. I've also touched wood. There's at the back of the studio. I have to whiz back and do it. Yeah, go on. So, okay. Okay, lastly then, what do you think of this idea that supposedly we're all falling in love with this way of seeing our doctors?
Well, that's fine for the ones that want to fall in love like that. I'm not one of them.
All right. Do you promise you'll stay in touch?
Absolutely.
Can I ask you a final question?
Yes.
What's your gig capacity?
My what?
Your gig? How many gigs have you got? Are you 5G?
I'm not sure that I've got any. I don't know what it is.
Priscilla, stay in touch. I love you. You're fantastic. I hope you don't have to see a doctor for many decades to come. What a super call. Should we move from the matters of health to matters very important and the crisis in our prisons? An independent review of prison capacity has been published today, and the former Chief Inspector of Prisons, Dame Anne Owers, joins me now, who led the review. Good to have you on, Dame Anne. I think you're possibly going to be a little more up to speed with matters than my previous contributor. What have we learned about the prison system? Good morning.
What have we learned? Well, we've learned that it's been in crisis for a long time. We've learned that it was in real crisis over 18 months up to last summer. At some points, the whole criminal justice system was within 3 days of collapsing because there simply wasn't enough space in prisons. And that's not for want of trying to build more prisons, but it is for want of looking wider and seeing what needs to be done in the rest of the system. If you think you can solve crime or solve criminal justice problem just by building prisons, it's a bit like thinking you can solve the health service by just building more A&E departments. They will just get full because you don't deal with the problems that got people there in the first place, and they will carry on coming back. So what this review is saying is you need a much wider look, and also you need planning ahead. You need some independent look that can say what is going to happen, rather than lots of reviews like mine, the sentencing review, Brian Levison's review, looking at what's gone wrong. We need to set up systems that make things go right in the first place.
I've got an overview of your review, and apparently it contains a series of revelations about the gross mismanagement of the prison system. Can you give one that shocked you and your colleagues the most?
I think what shocked me most was the fact that the criminal justice system as a whole was within 3 days of collapse on three separate occasions. Between 2023 and 2024, and that basically everyone was signalling this. They were signalling it from within prisons, they were signalling it from within the Ministry of Justice, they were trying to signal it to Number 10, and everyone was just hoping that some miracle would happen and it would go away. And you cannot run systems on that basis. You cannot run systems that run to the precipice before you take action to try to pull them back.
How can we be comfortable? I'm so sorry. How can we be comfortable we won't find ourselves in that situation again?
I don't think we can. I think that the prisons are still quite close to capacity. There are hopes that there will be a sentencing bill. There's a look at the way the courts are operating. But I think without introducing some sort of independent forward look, the inspectorates are brilliant at telling us how things are working and the fact that they're not working. Reviews like this are able to say this is what you got wrong. Unless you set up something that is independent of government and that can tell you how you can make things go right and what will be the consequences of actions that you take, I fear that we will carry on bumping into crises like this.
How necessary was it for the early release of prisoners we saw in the autumn of last year?
It was essential. The system would have collapsed without it. And people were actually very lucky it didn't collapse during the summer, because a lot of people were afraid that it would. It was essential to do that.
When I challenge people such as Alex Chalk, you won't need reminding, I'll remind my listeners, he's the former Justice Secretary on the Conservative administration. He said that there were many new prisons being built. He points me to one in Leicester, which I think is called Knoll Hill or Knoll Park. I can't remember from memory. How accurate is it that the Conservatives did embark on a prison building programme?
Well, they did, but actually, during that administration, they only succeeded in adding about 500 places to prisons, because at the same time, we've got a lot of old crumbling prisons that were either closing down or wings were closing down or whatever. You can't solve a prisons crisis just by building prisons. You've got to build what sits around the prisons and work out how it is that you can work with people in prisons too, because it's no good just putting people in prisons and then sending them out worse than when they came in. It was a Conservative policy document way back in 1990 that said if you are not careful, prisons could be an expensive way of making bad people worse.
So, armed with the OWASP review, there's the Gawk. I think you referenced David Gawk earlier. Yep. There's the Gawk review. Armed with these and other matters, what should the Justice Department do now, in your view?
First of all, the Justice Department should be investing in not prison, in probation services, in the voluntary sector services that can work with people when they've come out and ideally stop people going in the first place. Secondly, as I said, I think there needs to be an independent body that is looking at what is happening in criminal justice and is giving independent advice to government about what they should do. And I think that we also need to look at the way the prison service works, and with the Chief Inspector of Probation and Voluntary Services, look at the way that those services that are now receiving prisoners who are being released from prison and are working with people who don't go to prison, how those services, mental health services, addiction services, those are the things that drive people towards the criminal justice system, and the criminal justice system can't sort out on its own.
Grateful for your time this morning, Dayman. Thank you. Dayman Owers is former Chief Inspector of Prisons, who's led that review. Priscilla, if you're still listening, people are, well, in one instance, I think they are falling in love with you. Alex says, I love that call. Great personality, sense of humour, doesn't have a computer or an internet, but her humour fully intact. Same subject, this comes from, where's your name, do you remember? This comes from Alex Radio. What a brilliant and heartwarming chat. It was radio that made me so happy. Meanwhile, Nick in Oxford says, I want a date with Priscilla. Doug says, I love you, Priscilla, will you marry me? I feel like Cilla Black. Ask your grandparents, they'll know what that means. Priscilla, you're a star, there's no question. You're going to have to stay in regular contact. All right, the music means we move on. But we move on by going back to a conversation that I had with the Home Secretary over the suggestion made by Hamas that the United Kingdom's proposed recognition of the Palestinian state is a reward or the fruits of October the 7th. We'll take your reactions on that. Plus, how much should children be shielded from the horrors of war in books? Strong views from best-selling author responsible for The War Horse and many others, Michael Bopargo. And a row over this ad.
Genes are passed down from parents to offspring, often determining traits like hair color, personality, and even eye color. My jeans are blue.
Sydney Sweeney, Casper King.
Sydney Sweeney's jeans ad, and now Donald Trump has, of course, got involved. It's all after the 9 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has refused to put a target figure on a new migrants deal with France. A pilot of the one-in, one-out scheme is beginning this morning, but critics say the numbers involved won't make a difference. The UK will be able to return people who've arrived on small boats in exchange for asylum seekers who have links to Britain. Ms Cooper's told Nick that numbers will build up during the trial.
The first detentions we want to take place in a matter of days, right, and then we will be referring those cases immediately to France. There are then the processes that we need to work through, and we are ready to resist any legal challenge that comes forward as well. But we do want to see returns taking place in a matter of weeks.
Disruption from the aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing across much of Scotland. ScotRail says some routes could be closed until late this afternoon after they were blocked by falling trees. Police are still looking for dozens of suspected rioters a year after disorder that broke out across Britain. Officers, who've already charged more than 1,100 people, are setting up a website with the details of about 40 suspects. Officers investigating an alleged assault at St Pancras Station in London have arrested a 42-year-old man at Luton Airport. A video emerged last week appearing to show the right-wing activist Tommy Robinson next to a man lying on the floor. A health watchdog says people coming off weight loss drugs should be given support to help prevent them from putting the weight back on. The guidance from NICE only applies to patients offered the treatments on the NHS. Most using the jabs in the UK are getting them privately. Oliver Pickard is from the National Pharmacy Association.
Weight loss medication is not the holy grail of weight loss. Weight loss comes through a routine of exercise and changing our habit with food. Speak to your pharmacist, speak to your doctor, and make sure that every time you get the medication, it is done the proper way and a safe way.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was up 29 points at 91.58. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, calmer this morning with sunshine and showers for most places. Some heavier rain developing in central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £157 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, far away person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday, August the 5th. The proposed recognition of the Palestinian state by the United Kingdom in, what, just over 30 days' time, is a prize for terrorism and a fruit for the actions of October the 7th. Those are the different views. We'll come back to your conversation, come back to the conversation, take your views on that. Plus, in other news, a row over a pair of jeans. Well, not quite a pair of jeans, but jean advertising by Sydney Sweeney, with a play on the word jeans. Now there's a row with some people saying, are critics arguing that it promotes eugenics? I'll give you the full text, but never one to miss a passing bandwagon, here's President Donald Trump.
She's a registered Republican? Oh, now I love her ad. You'd be surprised at how many people are Republicans. If Sydney Sweeney is a registered Republican, I think her ad is fantastic.
Just zipper it up there, would you, Donald? But we'll come back to that argument. Plus, the brilliant and award-winning author, Michael Morpurgo. Now, he says children should not necessarily be shielded from the horrors of war, whether in his books, such as The War Horse, or with news bulletins as well, as long as you give them a degree of explanation and a degree of hope. Here he is speaking recently about how reading can help children handle their emotions.
Very often tend to forget about young people is that they're even more capable of deep feelings, spontaneous feeling, than grown-ups are. Children tend to look at the world with wide-open eyes and a wide-open heart.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A quick apology there. I demoted him. He's Sir Michael Morpurgo. My apologies, Sir Michael, saying that. He goes on to say that, particularly with bulletins at the moment, with the horrors that are seen, and he makes the point, by the way, horrors on all sides, it is important that children, in a way, see this. Do you shield your children from the nightly news? Possibly from bulletins, although we're fairly fastidious here. We try and give you a warning if there is going to be content. It is slightly different on the radio, obviously. And newspapers, do you remember those? Oh, dear God, thank goodness I got out of that one. But when the newspapers arrive in the morning, I wonder how many people that actually a newspaper drops through the letterbox now. Precious few, I suppose. But if you bring a paper home or you pick one up on the tram or the tube or the train, and there are desperately upsetting pictures of conflicts or possibly... But just recently, isn't there? A picture of, reportedly, this hostage, which leads us next into our next conversation, reportedly being told by Hamas to dig his own grave. Have you seen that? He is skeletal. But let's come back to a broader conversation of where the United Kingdom finds itself, and a challenge I put to Yvette Cooper. because Israel has accused the United Kingdom of being, and I quote, immoral and foolish by agreeing to recognise a Palestinian state. Gideon Saar, the Israeli foreign minister, accused Keir Starmer of handing Hamas a prize for terror by not making the move conditional on the release of the remaining hostages in Gaza. He says the Prime Minister's announcement, along with similar moves by France and Canada, had hardened the militant group's stance during recent peace talks. Recognition is, I say again, a prize for terror. Now, it's worth reminding you, of course, Sir Keir's initiative comes after France's unconditional promise to recognise Palestine and Canada's commitment to a state. But in Mark Carney's case, Canadian Prime Minister, they must have Hamas-free elections next year. But that's three of the G7 coming to the table, obviously the United Kingdom, France and Canada. But how has this been greeted by Hamas? Well, Ghazi Hamad, if I'm saying that correctly, a senior member, says the initiative by several countries to recognise a Palestinian state is one of the fruits of October the 7th. We've proven that victory over Israel is not impossible and our weapons are a symbol of Palestinian honour. An estimated 1,139 people lost their lives in Israel during the October 7th attacks. More than 200 were taken captive. And while we can play, we can read the history books and we can all go back and play one side off against the other, that was the spark that really lit the latest problems, which has led to the loss of thousands of lives, thousands of innocent lives in Gaza. How can anyone talk about there being any fruit from that? So even the Times newspaper today, which, as I often say, it's not known for its journalistic hyperbole, says the Prime Minister's blundering intervention on Palestinian statehood to appease anti-Israel sentiment is rewarding the barbarism of Hamas. That's their editorial. And I put that to Home Secretary Yvette Cooper. In the first hour of the show, she was on talking about the one-in, one-out policy. But what did she make of that stance?
I strongly disagree with that assessment. I strongly disagree with that assessment. The Prime Minister has rightly set out the pathway for recognising a Palestinian state, which has really been it's the inalienable right of the Palestinian people. And the Labour Party has always said that we wanted to be able to do that recognition and we wanted to be able to set out a pathway to do so.
So it will go ahead. Will go ahead. It will be a fruit of October the 7th.
We have set out conditions to be able to be assessed, and we have also been clear that that recognition does not include and will never include recognition of Hamas, who are a barbaric terrorist organisation and right. who need to be excluded from this process.
Adam Rose is a lawyer for the British Connected Hostages and acts for their families and joins me now. How important would it have been to attach conditions for Hamas with this proposed recognition, as the Prime Minister did with Israel? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It is a very strange statement that the government put out, and ministers seem to have been doubling down on it. It would have made a significant difference to have recorded as a condition to recognition the release of the hostages. Just to remind you and to remind your listeners, there are still 50 hostages being held 669 days on. Two of those have very close UK connections. Avinatan Orr, who's a 32-year-old, his mother is British. He has been held for 669 days. There has been one sighting of him in all that time. Hamas have not indicated whether he's dead or alive other than that one sighting, so Hamas haven't confirmed. They haven't allowed the International Red Cross in to see him. We know that he is going to be suffering because we have seen some of the hostages who have come out, as you said, looking skeletal. And we've seen videos over the past weekend of hostages looking skeletal. So to have made it a condition basically seems to be the bare minimum the government could have done. Instead, they haven't made it a condition.
How do you think the families might react when they hear a senior member of Hamas say that this is one of the fruits of October the 7th?
Sort of unsurprising to hear that kind of statement, and that was a statement made over the weekend. Whether it's intended to or not, and I don't believe it is intended to be a fruit from the government's perspective. I think they are taking what they perceive to be a principled position, but it's inevitable that if this follows that, then it is the consequence of that. And Hamas are not stupid in terms of their PR machine, and they will be making hay out of this.
And again, we look at two other G7 countries, Canada asking for Hamas free elections, France, no conditions whatsoever, unconditional.
Yeah. Remarkable. Rose. Absolutely remarkable. Sort of, the UK hasn't put conditions on Hamas and hasn't put conditions of release of the hostages at all. We've sought clarification a number of times. We've had meetings with Foreign Office officials, and we've heard what ministers have said. I heard what Yvette Cooper said just earlier. And whilst the statement that was put out last week, on Tuesday last week, does say that Hamas must immediately release all the hostages, that is not as a condition of recognition. And just to be clear, the families don't express a view at all on recognition. I'm sure some will be for and some will be against. They represent the wide range of views, political views in Israel, and some of them probably have no political views whatsoever. But the conditionality in this document is entirely on Israel, and says we will recognize the state of Palestine in September unless the Israeli government agrees to a ceasefire. There's no equivalent unless Hamas release all the hostages first. And that's, well, to put it mildly, extremely disappointing. And the families are quite distressed by this.
Adam Rose, thank you for your time. Good luck with the efforts. You're the lawyer acting for British connected hostages and their families. Are around to be about 50. Of course, tragically for many of the families, they don't actually know whether their relatives are alive or dead. There's no definitive figures and Hamas declines to give them. Scarlett McGuire is founder and director of Merlin Strategy. Are you as unequivocal on your condemnation of the Prime Minister here as, say, this Times leader column is? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not as unequivocal in my criticisms of the decision itself, but I am critical, I think, in its political implications. I think it's quite clear that Keir Starmer's Labour Party is feeling a lot of pressure from a part of the electorate that feel very, very strongly about this issue. We saw that at the last election when they independent, so-called Gaza independent MPs, five if you count Jeremy Corbyn, managed to take seats from the Labour Party. They nearly got close to a whole host of others as well. So I think Keir Starmer is under huge pressure, not least from those around his cabinet that face such a similar threat, like Wes Streeting or Shabana Mahmood, to have that sort of line on this issue. However, I don't think this is going to be enough to keep those voters on board. So I think he's going to end up making everyone quite upset.
The point I was exploring with the lawyer earlier, Scarlett, many find it strange that there are no conditions whatsoever put on Hamas. Was that a misstep?
I think, again, because most of the population actually don't have a particular opinion on this issue, when you poll them, you can see that more people think that Palestine should be an independent state than not, although, again, I think it's an issue of really quite low salience for most voters. But given that is the case, I would think that it would make more sense to at least give the other side a sense that you are listening to them rather than you might just be appeasing a particular part of the electorate.
Stare into your crystal ball, lastly, Scarlett, if you would. Just over 30 days' time, it is scheduled that the United Kingdom will recognise the Palestinian state. Likely to go ahead. There is reportedly a degree of political tension that Sir Keir is now experiencing.
My guess will be that it will be likely to go ahead, but again, I'm not going to be an expert on that.
Scarlett McGuire, thank you for your time. Founder and Director of Merlin Strategy. Let's read you those words again and see if you agree. The initiative by several countries to recognise a Palestinian state is one of the fruits of October the 7th, so says Ghazi Hamad, a senior member of Hamas. He goes on, we've proven that our victory over Israel is not impossible and our weapons are a symbol of Palestinian honour. Not one condition whatsoever on Hamas. Reportedly now pressure growing on Sir Keir. Quite how he can row back, I've no idea. But domestic pressure to somehow delay the recognition until Hamas releases the remaining hostages, or the suggestion that Hamas have played a brilliant, brilliant PR game as well. This, as we discover, the huge amounts, and this is from the United Nations, the huge amounts of aid that is scheduled to get into Gaza, but is stolen, misappropriated, or just never gets there. I'll give you more details on that side of it after this. It's 9:15, LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
Migrants arriving in the UK on small boats could be detained and returned to France from today. The aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing to cause disruption across northern parts of the UK, and police are still looking for dozens of suspected rioters a year after the Southport disorder. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places, with heavy rain in central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 Heathrow Spur Road remains closed southbound from the main M4 carriageway down to the airport. It's because of a technical problem inside the tunnel, and as a result, there are lengthy delays back onto the main M4. So obviously, if you're heading that way to Heathrow Airport, do allow yourself extra time. On the Surrey stretch of the M25, there are lengthy delays clockwise from before Junction 10 at the A3 up to Junction 11 at Chertsey. It's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed for recovery. Stoke Newington High Street remains closed because of the ongoing investigation. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo District and Piccadilly lines. Minor delays on the Elizabeth line between Paddington and Reading.
LBC.
From the first time they lose a
baby tooth, look, Mum,
to the countless times they forget to mention their
ingredients for food tech tomorrow,
to the last time you hear that school was
alright.
Kids grow up fast. Luckily at Tesco, we have back-to-school gear that grows with them, like trousers and skirts with grow-with-me hems and adjustable waists, so you can focus less on the cost and more on all this. Tesco, every little helps. Available in the majority of larger stores and online.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
What makes matchday? You know Maggie's cap is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace. He gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Match Day is about more than just a game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
I've been asked by Shredded Wheat to read out their ingredients list. Drum roll. Whole grain wheat. No, that's it. A single ingredient, high fibre cereal. Shredded Wheat. It simply does it. I'm telling you, that's it. Applies to Shredded Wheat Bite Size and Big Biscuit only.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
There's no question that Sir Keir Starmer is not a bright man. Of course he is. You don't get to be a barrister. You don't get to have his career in law unless you're a pretty clever guy or a pretty clever woman, of course. But it is extraordinary that there was no conditions put on the other side, that when they were working through the paper, as it was put in front of him, no one thought to say, well, hang on, we ought to... If we're asking Israel for so much, we've got to ask something of Hamas. There is absolutely no what's called quid pro quo. Of course, this does fuel in some way the belief in some quarters. I'm not saying this is one to which I necessarily subscribe, in that the way Hamas have handled the whole Gaza episode, crisis, disaster, whichever word you want to put there, has been an extraordinary act of PR. The majority of aid sent to Gaza is intercepted by armed militants and civilians before it reaches its intended target, says the United Nations. UN data shows just 14% of the pallets collected at the Gaza border arrive safely. 86% are intercepted, and I quote directly from the UN report, either peacefully by hungry people or forcefully by armed actors during transit into Gaza, close quotes. This coming from a UN agency. That means that of the 29,885 aid pallets collected for delivery between mid-May and last weekend, nearly 26,000 were taken en route. So the starvation in Gaza, which you can see on your television screens most days, and certainly photographs in your newspapers, is, as many people have said, in part fuelled by whoever the armed actors are, as they call them, the UN, the armed actors. You don't literally mean actors, of course, armed parties, but perhaps a better word, that's going on there. Ahmed in New Malden. Ahmed, does the government need to consider its position here? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, sir.
Good morning, Mike. It's been a long time.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I must thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Yes. Recognition of State of Palestine is long time coming.
Should there not have been some conditions, though?
We can talk about it.
That's what I'd like you to do. Do you think there should have been... Yeah.
No, the reason is millions of Palestinians, innocent civilians, are fighting for their life every day.
Yeah.
Their home is obliterated. They're only fighting for their homeland,
mm-hmm.
From which they have been forced out.
Yes.
For God's sake, come on. We are seeing the horror, unprecedented horror, on our screens every day. We have no conscience anymore.
Does it not trouble... It's Nick, by the way. I think you're calling me Mike. Does it not trouble you when you hear a senior Hamas saying that this is the fruits of October the 7th?
It's not fruit,
Well, no, hold on, sir. That's what he says, not me.
Look, Nick, you are splitting here.
Well, no, I'm not. The man from Hamas...
No, listen. Let me say, please. The fruit, you can use any word. Thing is, millions of Palestinians are fighting for their life.
You've said that already. I'm coming back to you. You don't think it's one of the fruits of October the 7th?
Well, what they may be implying is that the recognition of state of Palestine is coming. This is a result of that. Hundreds of thousands of...
You're either willfully not answering, or I'm not putting it correctly. I'm not sure which it is. Is it fair to describe it as a fruit, as a benefit?
It's not fruit. You can infer this word in any way you like.
I'm not inferring it. It's not me. It's a senior member of Hamas who's calling it a fruit, which I would suggest calls into question the government's stance, the British government's stance, and certainly the French government's stance, which is no conditions whatsoever on either party. Ahmed, thank you. We return to this. It is a related story, because when you hear discussions such as this, on the radio it's not as challenging. But if it's happening, if you're seeing it on television, if you're reading it in newspapers and you're seeing still photographs, should you shield your children from some of those images and some of those photographs? Well, one award-winning author thinks no. And there's a clue, Sir Michael Morpurgo, behind the war horse there. That's a movie from 2011 with music composed by John Williams. Sir Michael Morpurgo urging children's authors to stop sugarcoating war in their books. He wrote, as I said, War Horse, Private Peaceful. The young should not be patronised. It's a lengthy article in the Radio Times. Let me try and sub this down. There has always been a tendency, a temptation in children's books and films to shy away from darker, more difficult issues. He says children have to know a war. Books play an important, even essential part in this. His conversation comes ahead of the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, which, of course, falls later this month. That was victory over Japan, commemorating the complete cessation of the Second World War. Of course, we've already celebrated the end of the war in Europe. Now, he's speaking as wars in Gaza, Ukraine and elsewhere stoke fears a larger conflict engulfing several countries should break out. So Michael says children growing up can see snatches of war and suffering often enough on their screens. They witness the horror and destruction of it. They can switch it off, change channels, but they do not forget. To learn of sadness and loss is part of growing up, as is an understanding of the turbulent history of ourselves and other peoples and cultures. The mind of a child is fragile. In every one of those stories, there's always hope, not happy ever after hope, but the belief that reconciliation is the only solution and is always possible. Dr. Amanda Gummit is a child psychologist, is a mother, and founder of Good Play Guide, all one word, goodplayguide.com. What should parents do when children of a vulnerable age sitting in the front room and maybe a news broadcast comes in and there are pictures of people starving or, God forbid, dead bodies? Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? And as a parent, your natural instinct is to shield them. But it depends on the age of the child. And actually, the most important thing is to give the children space to ask questions and to answer those questions simply, honestly, and age appropriately. So if you've got a, I know, an 18-month-old baby seeing stuff on screen, it's going to go over their head. They're not going to recognise it. It doesn't matter. 3-4-year-olds are going to wonder what it is, but they might have as much interest in that as what's for tea, or they might not understand it. As children get older, though, it's really important to answer their questions, because it is, if you don't answer them when they ask them, they will go elsewhere, and then you don't have any control over how reliable that information is that they're getting. So books and magazines and TV programmes done well, age appropriately, you know, is a really important way to introduce children to the realities of the world we live in.
So when a 7-year-old says, Mummy or Daddy, why are those people killing those other people? What do you say?
Well, so at 7 or 8, you talk about people having different views and different... I mean, again, it depends on your view of the situation. It's absolutely fine for you to give your opinion. But if in a very complex, nuanced scenario where it's just on the news and you don't have all the facts, the best thing to do is to say, it's awful, isn't it? How does it make you feel? Talk to them about how they're feeling and what they can, you know, what they understand. And then, if need to, go and research it together. Research it with them. Help them find the answers in a fact-based. Talk to them about how to distinguish between propaganda and fact. And it's, you know, 7 isn't too young to start doing that in a very, you know, child-friendly way. But the other thing is to not talk to them like they're mini adults. Let them ask the questions, let them get the honest answers they want, and then if they've got more questions, they can ask more questions. I think as adults, we tend to give them chapter and verse when they ask a simple question that they might not have actually been that bothered about. It was just something that popped into their head. So it's important to gauge how invested they are in the topic and how upset they are by something.
Sir Michael says, war is part of the world into which they have been born. They hear and see stories vividly told of the consequences of war too. The starvation, the disease, the drowning of migrants, escaping conflict. Do you think, with the exception of some chunks of the previous century, the world is a far more brutal place for children growing up now than it has been?
I think it's more uncertain. I think it's harder for children to know what's going to happen, where to go for information, how to navigate the world. I think brutality has been, you know, ever thus.
And lastly, parents then, always be alive, alert, and keep your ears open to what you hear from your children in these issues.
Yeah, and be that safe space for them to talk to you about their concerns, what they've seen, what they're worried about, because that keeps that communication open, and it gives you the opportunity to help your children navigate.
Doctor, thanks for your time. Amanda Gummer, you're a child psychologist, you are a mum, and you're a founder of all one word, goodplayguide.com. Let's get a call in ahead of the news. Faru is in Southfields. Faru, how do you think issues like this should be discussed with children, and what sort of ages are we talking about? Faru? Totally my fault. I do apologise. I'm
fine, it's fine.
Getting past it. There's no other word. I'm the Harry,
no, you're not.
I'm the Harry Brook of radio. I gave up my wicket needlessly there. Right, on you go, Faru.
No, don't worry. So, yes, we should, because otherwise, again, you know... Sorry. Yes, we should, because they don't read books in terms of teenagers, and also some of the information might be out of date. They're getting it from social media. You've got loads of misinformation. You've got loads of bias. I've gone further. My 15-year-old actually attended a fundraiser for Ideals and Islamic Help, which sends surgeons to Gaza, like Dr. Victoria Rose. Mm-hmm. The descriptions and pictures were absolutely horrific, and they were of children. I actually told my children to look away, and they turned around and said they'd seen worse on social media. So that's what's really worrying. I think you've got to go further than books and, you know, articles. You've got to educate them with caution. You're shaping young minds. They need to develop critical thinking, understand social justice. But I think the really important thing is to be balanced. And for a lot of us, that's really difficult. I come down on one particular side.
Can you remember when you first saw images of war or people who were dead or horror, how old you were and how you reacted? Can you remember?
I think I was about 10 because I have Jewish friends and Israeli friends, and I have Palestinian friends, and that was the kind of story we were covering. Falklands and things like that, you know, you didn't get it on TV because you didn't have social media. And my biggest concern as a parent is that my children are getting a rounded view of what is happening. And, you know, even we talk about Ukraine, you still didn't get all of this horrific stuff on social media. My children are not on Instagram or Facebook. They're on Snapchat. I think they've got TikTok, and that's really worrying.
You've got a 15-year-old, did you say boy? What are your other children?
No, I've got 15-year-old twins. They're
twins.
Girls.
Oh, right. I'm so sorry. Oh, two 15-year-olds, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they are very aware of these children.
They're on the verge of getting onto TikTok, aren't they, do you not think? What do you think?
They've had it, I think, for a year or so. I've got parental controls. But the problem with social media is that you can get around it. You can get around it. So you can be as careful as you want to. The only way to not have social media is not give them a phone.
Wish them well from me. I have to go. We're already late to the news. How old were you when you first saw death? Oh, this is on television, by the way. I don't want you to, you know, had to see, you know, you'd lost your grandma or something. Horrific death, starvation, whatever it might have been. How old were you? What do you remember as your recollection? We'll take your calls. It's 9:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
A pilot of the UK's small boats return deal with France has come into force for the first time. Britain will be able to send people crossing the English Channel back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. Engineers are working to fix power cuts and clear debris from railway lines after Storm Floris. Scottish government ministers held an emergency meeting last night to coordinate their response to the disruption. A third of GP appointments in England in June were carried out over the phone or online. That's up from 30% a year earlier to the highest proportion since the pandemic. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places with heavier rain in central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Having more energy isn't just about sunrise sprints or pumping iron. It's about being able to live life on full charge every day. That's why Holland & Barrett's Energy Squad is here for you, in store or online, offering personalised expert advice to support your energy levels. Head to a Holland & Barrett store to shop their wide range of products or chat to one of their Energy Squad to find the right support for you.
Join us for the Mercedes-Benz Platinum Star event. From the 8th to the 18th of August, enjoy exclusive in-store savings when you order your new Mercedes-Benz and step into a world of refined luxury. From the all-electric EQS with intuitive MBUX hyperscreen to the GLE SUV's comfort-enhancing massaging seats, this is excellence redefined. Appointments are limited. Book yours today at your local showroom. T's and C's apply. Selected models subject to availability.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
No point asking you questions if I'm not prepared to share my story. So while I was talking with Farah there, I was thinking, right, I'm going to ask this young woman what her first recollection was. And I'm racing. And I realised I'm of a generation, and I would have been in my teens. I would have been in my teens when this TV show started. Now, if you're of a certain age, you can see the opening credits. And they were brilliant because there were pictures of people involved in the war. And you know how you can see an image and it starts to crackle around the side of the picture as it burns? And it closes, as I recall, with a little boy in like a long dress coat, and the picture just burns into a frazzle. Narrated by the late Lord Olivier. Made on a budget. I looked it up, actually, while I was in the news bulletin. Here we go. Made in a budget of £880,000. which in today's money would be £15 million. It was the most expensive factual series ever made at the time, narrated by, as I say, well, it says Lawrence, I think he was Lord Olivier, music composed by Carl Davis. If you've got time, and it's a, let me say, as they say in this industry, it's a tough watch. It's really tough. Because what I remember so vividly are, you just see soldiers dead, frozen in the Russia campaign. You see the appalling images from the camps such as Belsen and Auschwitz. It is an extraordinary, extraordinary piece of television. But what was the first that kind of image you ever saw, either on TV or in a book? Mary's in Tunbridge Wells. Mary, what would you tell me? Good morning.
Hi, I was born in 1937, so...
Oh, goodness me. Wow. What your generation need is a good war to sort you out. That's what I think.
How kind.
I'm only kidding. Well, you've got some memories to share. Come on, I want to hear them all.
Well, you can't hear them all, but there's not time. We grew up during that time. We had children at school with us who'd been interred in Japanese camps.
Yep.
And also in it, then we had kinder transport children.
Yes.
And we accepted them.
Do you think we were more accepting of people from other countries and other cultures back then than we are today?
Yes.
Why do you suppose that is?
There weren't so many of them.
Is that what's happened? It's just sheer numbers?
I think it's sheer numbers, yep.
Can you remember... Do you remember that TV series, World at War?
Oh, I do indeed. I loved it.
I don't know if I used the word love. Why did you love it, Mary?
Oh, well, I don't mean loved it, but I... Well, how can one put it? I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a tremendous piece of television, wasn't it?
Tremendously.
Now, I don't want to pry, but if you've had children or grandchildren or nieces and nephews, have you tried to shield them away from some of the horrors, or do you think they have to learn, as Sir Michael says?
Well, I think they do, but I've got one daughter who doesn't. She shields my granddaughter from all that sort of thing, and herself,
right.
Yeah, she doesn't want to know.
What do you think of that approach? How wise or otherwise is that?
I think it's very unwise.
I mean, she's probably a woman in her 50s or maybe even 60s, this daughter, isn't she?
Oh, she's only in her 50s.
In her 50s. Okay. She's in her 50s. I mean, she's done well if she's managed to be shielded from the horrors of life through into her 50s, isn't she?
Yes, she has, yes.
All right. And lastly, the author, Sir Michael Mapurgo. Children do need to see it. I sense you'd probably be on the same page as Sir Michael on this.
I am indeed.
All right, Mary. Lovely hearing from you. And what's your most vivid memory about the war?
I'm only 88.
I know. God bless you. I hope I can say that in 6 years' time. No, I'm only kidding. What's your most vivid memory of the Second World War?
Oh, goodness me. What is it? I think... I don't know. I think it was going up to London and seeing the devastation up there.
Where were you living during the Second World War?
In the Cotswolds.
Oh, my God, how beautiful.
Oh, it was. It was.
I think it still is, actually.
It was cider with Rosie all the way.
Oh, yeah, I know cider with Rosie. Just seeing bombed-out buildings?
Yeah, all the bombed-out buildings, yeah.
And do you remember VE and VJ Day? Do you remember the parties?
Yeah, I do. I do.
You would have been...
I was at the Victory Parade.
Which one, VE or VJ?
VE.
Yeah. You'd have been, what, 7 or 8?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. What memories. Be well, Mary. Thanks for your input. I'm asking when you first saw, as Sir Michael Mapurgo says, don't shield children. They are, as long as you give them a degree of hope, there is a fragility, but as long as you tell stories and that there's a degree of hope, not happy ever after hope, I'm quoting directly, but the belief reconciliation is possible. And we'll come back to that. No reconciliation at the moment concerning this ad.
Genes are passed down from parents to offspring, often determining traits like hair color, personality, and even eye color. My genes are blue.
Sydney Sweeney, Asperger Genes.
Well, the voiceover is clear enough. Sydney Sweeney, of course, the 27-year-old star. Let me just tell you what she says, because it perhaps for some of us, genes are passed down from parents to offspring, often determining traits like hair colour, personality, and even eye colour. My genes are blue. Now, of course, this is a pun on the word genes, as in jeans. the ones that you can buy at a store when you wear, with starting with a J, and genes which are your genetics, which of course starts with the letter G. Critics are now saying it promotes eugenics, some comparing it, and this I find extraordinary, and I do think every time you mention the word Nazi, you've probably lost the argument, comparing it to Nazi propaganda. Never one to miss hopping on a passing bandwagon, Donald Trump.
He's a registered Republican? Oh, now I love her ad. You'd be surprised at how many people are Republicans. If Sydney Sweeney is a registered Republican, I think her ad is fantastic.
How will they be reacting in American Eagle, in the offices of American Eagle, and indeed, of course, the ad agency that's made it? Mark Borkowski, PR and brand expert, founder of PR agency Borkowski, and is, as in his name, joins me now. OK, how will they be reacting in those respective offices, Mark? Morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. I think they'll be celebrating. I think sales have gone up. Of course, advertising of this ilk is built in this day and age to create a conversation. And here we are this morning having a conversation about American Eagle jeans. I mean, it is what we've seen on countless times in fashion brands. Whether it was all orchestrated, I don't know, but they are certainly enjoying the coverage, and they're enjoying the amount of money they've probably invested in Sydney Sweeney, the ubiquitous Sydney Sweeney, the modern who is adorns every magazine cover, every Instagram post. She is Jane Mansfield, Marilyn Monroe rebooted.
You are a pretty plain-speaking bloke. I've known you for yonks. This idea that it's tying into eugenics, or there's even a Nazi theme to it. Mark?
Oh, come on. It's a jeans ad. At the end of the day, I think I don't think it was deliberately done, but it just shows the level of which the conversation can spike, and people can get highly animated about issues. They're seeing things that are probably not there. Like Balenciaga, I think you and I had a conversation ages ago at Balenciaga when they had that advertising campaign with kids holding bondage teddy bears. Yes. We've seen some really appalling mistakes made. I think this is, they've just sort of sat there thinking, you know, great, and now Donald Trump joins in.
But is that a problem, lastly, Mark? Because most people buying jeans are probably not going to be the president's age, or indeed my age for that matter. They're going to be kids off 27 who don't necessarily identify with Donald J. Trump.
I think the people who identify with American Eagle jeans are now Sydney Sweeney, and the amount of jeans she can probably sell on the back of her fame is what they'll be focused on. It's all about Sydney Sweeney. This debate about eugenics is a sideshow.
Mark Borkowski, thanks as ever, Mark. You're PR brand expert and founded the PR agency Borkowski. Let's come back. We might take calls on that, but a lot of people want to talk about this interview from the brilliant and award-winning author, and best-selling author for that matter, Sir Michael Morpurgo, and his views on what should and should not be contained in children's books, and indeed what children should or should not be shielded from. Simon's in Leicester. Simon, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, morning, Nick. How are you doing?
All right, thank you, sir. What are you going to tell me?
I am a children and young people's counsellor, and have been for about 5 years.
What, emotional issues, you mean? Things like that?
All sorts of things.
Right.
Okay, so what
sort of age
say,
children do you work with?
From 7 up to the age of 24.
Wow, that's not a child in the latter ages there, but what do you make of this then? How, if you were to have a child sitting opposite you, 8, 9-year-old, Simon, my mum and dad love watching the news. All I see is people are dead and starving. I can't hack it. What would you say?
Well, with respect, your previous callers, basically what they're kind of talking about, it's a willful, kind of extremely worrying level of ignorance in terms of the level and the tone and the veracity of information that's accessible to all children now compared to years gone by. So we a lot of us have seen the horrendous, the horrific things that are out there on the internet. And I can tell you that children of all ages going into their teens and going into early adolescence and beyond, there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of kind of angst.
Confusion over what?
What they're witnessing, because your previous callers haven't seen. So I'll give you a quick example. So with the Afghan-Syria crisis, there was a round of videos about people showing people being beheaded and things. Well, this is far worse. What's happening in this conflict is far worse on many levels.
This is worse than the... Oh dear, we've got a problem. Who's let the dogs out? That's all right. You let the dogs out. You're saying this might be a bit difficult because we're talking about a sensitive issue, but because I was going to talk about beheading videos and I think shouting over a dog. I'll tell you what, Simon, if you can, hold. Let's get the news bulletin. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Speaking to Nick, the Home Secretary's refused to put a target figure on a new migrants' return deal with France. Disruption from the aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing across much of Scotland, and police are still looking for dozens of suspected rioters a year after disorder broke out across the UK. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most, with rain in central and northern areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 Heathrow Spur Road remains closed southbound from the main M4 down to the airport terminals. It's because of a technical problem and that's causing delays on the main M4 carriageway. Now, elsewhere on the M25, clockwise, it's very busy at Junction 6 at Godstone. A lorry's broken down. And then there are delays clockwise from Junction 10 at the A3 to 11 at Chertsey. And that's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. Stoke Newington High Street remains closed because of an ongoing investigation. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Piccadilly line, and the Elizabeth line still suffering with minor delays between Reading and Paddington. It was after that track problem from earlier, and Great Western Railway are still disrupted on that stretch.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The gulf between what people believe about immigration and what is actually true could barely be bigger. How on earth do we push back?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Oh, those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
What makes matchday? You know Maggie's cap is the vibe.
Mate, Pie King all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the Dog and Duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Matchday is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much guitar?
Yep, lost them. Bored, I offered to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, I think we can hope for a slightly more fruitful conversation with Simon from Leicester because the dogs have either been let out or been put back in. It's not sure which one it is. You were saying that some of the videos currently are more distressing than the videos that were put out, those horrific videos of people being beheaded. Is that right?
Yes, very much so.
Tell me why so. That's what I want to explore.
Well, the explicit nature. Obviously, we're watching, you know, war in real time.
But you're watching documented. Someone having their head cut off.
Young people were with the Syria-Afghanistan conflict, yes. But there's footage out there right now circulating, which is, you know, on that level or beyond.
What?
And if you take into account that the median or the average age of somebody in Gaza is, what, 15 to 18 years old, women and children, all of that's being filmed.
Right. What, you mean the fact that they're desperate for food and they're starving?
Well, and the shootings and the killings and all of the war crimes, it's all online.
Right,
And there's no difference.
Well, I'll have to take your word for it, because you work with children, I don't, but I would have thought the barbarism of some of those videos, well, unfortunately, I only ever saw one, and then I decided I never wanted to see another one, of someone having their head cut off in the mm-hmm. mistaken belief of a certain religion. I hasten to add the mistaken belief. I didn't think anything could ever match it, but you say these videos do.
Yes.
All right, OK. Well, at least we've had that conversation. Thank you for moving the dogs or whatever, and we got into that. So, what is the right age? Is Sir Michael right? Robin is in Murfield. Where's that near, then, Robin? Good morning.
Hi there, Nick. Hey. It's in West Yorkshire, round near sort of Huddersfield.
I know where you are now. OK, very good. What are you going to tell me? Thank you.
Well, I remember... sorry, a little bit starstruck.
Who's coming in the room?
I remember when I was a child, around about the age, maybe 8 or 9, and it was around about the time of the September the 11th attacks.
Yep.
And I remember seeing it on TV. I'd been picked up from school. It must have been possibly a rerun. I don't know exactly what time it happened in the day.
Right.
But it had been shown pretty much all over the news.
And how old were you then, roughly, Robin, just roughly?
Eight or nine.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And I remember seeing it with my mother, because she was just watching it and saying, oh, how awful it was. And I could sort of comprehend what was happening, but again, was completely, sorry for the term, but sort of blown away by it because of just how out of the ordinary it was. And sort of, and the thing is, I always grew up with sort of military background. My father was in the army, and and my grandfather, etc. But this felt so wrong, because war was often always a distant thing. And then this was, I know it was America, I don't live in America, but it felt practically on the doorstep.
Right.
And I remember being, because it was around about the time that all the Gerry Anderson shows were rerunning, you know, Thunderbirds and...
Oh, yes, Stingray, Captain Scarlet and Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
Yep, no,
and
well.
And I always remember it because I was actually at the time, I was in the next room watching an episode of Captain Scarlet, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I remember going through into the room, seeing it with my mother, and sort of almost thinking, is she watching the same thing that I am? because these big set pieces going up, of course, in actual fact, it was these two buildings and these thousands of terrible deaths. And then walking into the next room, being a bit confused.
Well, I remember talking about the impact that this would have on children, and how we had to be very careful if you're a newspaper editor or a TV bulletin editor, what you should say. Now I'm speaking to someone who was a child, which is really fascinating for me. What images live with you most, as long as I'm not distressing you, what images live with you most from that horrific day back in 9/11?
Yeah, I always remember it because I always remember walking into the kitchen where we had this little TV and seeing it and seeing the planes going in and flames and actually my mum said, you know, my God, it's so awful. It almost looks like it's Thunderbird in regards to it being...
Yeah, because I remember that show vividly. Yeah, yeah.
And then I remember going into the next room and watching my programme, and eerily, just as I'd seen one of the towers come down, a building on the episode I'd been watching, I think it was the first episode, it then exploded in a very similar way, and it's always stuck with me.
Interesting.
And it's only sort of as I've got older and reflected on it, I've gone, you know, it's obviously one is trivial, of course, it's a children's show and things, and one is very real and horrific.
It is indeed. Robin, I have enjoyed our conversation. Enjoy yourself. I'm only finishing with you, sir, to move on. Thank you for your input. Really interesting for me, by the way, to talk to them, because I remember debating people like you, young people like you at the time, how it should be handled. Peter, I sense you and I, actually might you might be a fraction older than me. I grew up in the 60s. Vietnam was on the news every night, showing images I will never forget. I'm so with you. So that when I was of an age and I had some money, I had to go and see Vietnam for myself. I was just so, it so guided my thoughts. Susan says, in 1974, I was reading a newspaper on a bus. I saw a still photograph of a beheading about to take place in Saudi Arabia. It was traumatising. I was 21. I would say any images of extreme horror and violence can be very disturbing for young people, or older people for that matter. If you're wondering why we're talking about it, Sir Michael Mapurgo, the brilliant award-winning author, War Horse and other works, interviews given in the Radio Times. We should help children. We should point out that there is always hope for reconciliation, but we should not shield them from such images. Timothy in Dagenham. You're on the radio. Hi, Timothy. What would you say to this debate?
Nick, getting to be a regular, I am.
Right.
Two things I'd like to speak about, if I may.
Go ahead.
About the films, first of all, and then about the boat people.
Well, let's do the films first, if we could, yes.
Yeah, I remember the World at War.
Do you? Right, the show, the series that I watched, yes.
Yeah, I used to watch that, I used to love it. And then I used to watch all the war films, and I used to love them, and I particularly liked Audie Murphy, who was a war hero, the most decorated war hero of World War Two.
Right.
Then
What are the war films that you enjoyed the most then, Timothy?
The ones from World War Two and that I used to enjoy.
Right.
And specifically Audie Murphy, because he then became an actor when he got out of the army.
I don't know. Can you give me one of his? I'm sorry, I'm struggling. I don't know this. What's one of his films that I would know what it is?
Oh, his most famous one was the one about his life story where he played himself. It was called To Hell and Back.
I don't know. I've missed this. Totally.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, look him up. He's the most decorated soldier of World War Two.
Right.
He won every medal you can imagine.
Okay.
I think he won the Purple Heart three times.
Okay. So when you were younger, yeah, I've got it. One of my colleagues very kindly got it up. I think you might be a fraction older than me. 1955 is this when this particular movie was made, To Hell and Back.
Yeah, that's the one about his life story. That was after he'd come out of the army and become an actor.
Yeah.
But he was very tiny. And his leading ladies in the cowboy films used to dig a ditch, and he used to walk in the ditch because he was. I mean, they used to walk in the ditch, and he used to work because he was so small. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's Audie Murphy. Yeah, they used to say that about Alan Ladd as well, didn't they? But there we have learnt that. Timothy, I have to let you go. I know you had other comments to make. I'm sure some of my colleagues will be taking that conversation on through the course of the day. But I'm almost done because I just want to finish by paying tribute to someone that you would have heard. And as I said yesterday when I was contacted for a comment, anyone who has spent any time doing any form of speech radio will know what a colossus this industry lost yesterday.
And a very good afternoon to you. This is James Wells Drive on LBC 97.3, getting you home as smoothly as we can. We'll keep you up to date with the traffic situation. Every 15 minutes, got a 42-inch plasma TV to give away between now and 6 o'clock as well. Moving on from the problems of the urban foxes, but we will return to that if we have time a little later. A lot of you very concerned about the foxes in the middle of our capital. But on to David Cameron's speech today. He warned that the government's deficit was even worse than first thought.
That was a throwback, wasn't it? David Cameron, plasma TVs, the great James Whale, who sadly finally lost his life. My God, he was a battler. He'd had cancer once before. It's finally claimed him. I was in contact with him last week. He was in a hospice, looked after by his amazing wife. Possibly not best known for his work on LBC, but they say it many times. He was a true pioneer. James Whale, who's died. He was 74. That's it for today. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
My inbox is now going to be full of people asking for details on how they can win a 42-inch plasma TV for at least the next 20 minutes. And there are a few people whose understanding of radio and gift for it was so acute who would find that more amusing than James Whale. A lovely tribute, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we will turn our attention first, and I suspect for once, possibly even foremost, to an extraordinary gulf between what people think about immigration and what the facts actually tell us. I can't remember seeing this chasm in understanding quite so starkly displayed as it is in some new polling. And, of course, it begs the question, what do we do about it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has told LBC she is ready to resist any legal challenges over a new migrants deal with France. The pilot will see people who've arrived in small boats return to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. Ms. Cooper says she is expecting the first detentions within a matter of days. Conservative frontbencher Andrew Griffith says it won't act as a deterrent.
If you're given the chance of a lottery ticket and you've got a 90 to 95% chance of that ticket winning, allowing you to stay in the United Kingdom, then I don't think that's going to have the deterrent effect that, for example, our Rwanda scheme, which would have been a genuine one in, you're off to Rwanda, then we'll process you and consider whether you have a fair claim from there or not.
Engineers are working to restore power to around 22,000 properties in the north and northeast of Scotland. Disruption from the aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing across much of the country. Work's underway to clear trees from several railway lines. Aidan McGiven is from the Met Office.
These are exceptional wind speeds for August. It's difficult to find similar strength storms going back decades. So these could be some of the strongest wind gusts ever recorded, even in a windy part of the country, for the summer.
The television presenter Jay Blades has been charged with two counts of rape. West Mercia Police says the 55-year-old will appear in court over the alleged offences next week. People with a record of violence or domestic abuse are to be prevented from owning guns. New guidance says police should interview partners and carry out additional checks before issuing a firearms licence. It follows several high-profile shootings, including the Keam attack in Plymouth 4 years ago. And it's exam results day across Scotland. Around 147,000 students are due to receive their national higher and advanced higher results, but Storm Floris means some postal deliveries could be delayed. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 24 at 91.56. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places. Calmer this morning, but still some heavy rain across central and northern parts. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten and I have got a problem. It is happening. I guess it was perhaps inevitable. From the moment that Nigel Farage turned up in Dover with his Fisher-Price binoculars and started filming people coming in on small boats, people who constitute a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion of our overall immigration figures, and of whom, I think last time I checked, over 70% end up having their asylum applications approved. The narrative has been successfully, just as the narrative of European Union membership was successfully manipulated. The nation was successfully gaslit into believing lots and lots of things that weren't true. And the problem I've got is that I don't know how you deal with it. It's tempting to ignore it, isn't it? It's tempting to ignore the people who scream daily about one tiny aspect of our immigration situation and provide absolutely none of the facts that are necessary to forming an informed, evidence-based opinion. If we've learned anything in the last 10 years, it is what can happen when you have strong and pungent opinions that are not rooted in reality. That is when, I think, the really bad stuff happens. Do you remember? I'm haunted by the thoughts of a caller. Did we clip it up? I'm haunted by the memory of a caller from about, in my mind, it's about 3 months ago. And he said, I've got very strong opinions. And I said, oh, that's interesting. What are they based on? He said, it's not my job to base them on something. Do you remember that? I can't quite remember it. I think he speaks for a huge swathe of the population. And I don't know what to do about it. I mean, for an easy life, we could just ignore it, couldn't we? Together, you and I, plenty of other people on LBC will be wanging on about it forever. Again, possibly contributing to the problem that I'm about to describe to you rather than seeking to solve it. But do you surrender? Do you give up? Do you roll over? Do you choose the easier life? Because that way, madness lies. You ignore the facts and you leave the field free for the people who deliberately warp understanding and deliberately gaslight nations, then the really bad stuff happens. Have you seen the figures for Brexit? It's quite an apt moment, actually, to remind you of what happens when people actually get to see the rabbit, when people actually get to unwrap the box that has been placed under their Christmas tree by the likes of Boris Johnson and his mates. You actually get to see what's inside it, and support for not being in the European Union anymore plummets to, I think, about a third. And that is the problem I've got this morning. I don't know that there'll ever be an equivalent for immigration facts, immigration figures. And I know, listen, it's a really fertile ground to scream fear, to explain. Some people have even let the mask slip on occasion and revealed that they are in the business of selling fear, of scaring people regardless of the facts. But look, it sells newspapers. It brings in television audiences. It brings in radio audiences. Not the biggest, of course. That's us. But it does nonetheless bring in radio audiences. It delivers a frisson that you can't really deliver with the facts. How many times have I said to you that the queue for the ghost train will always be 100 times longer than the queue for the weight machine, the speak your weight machine? And it just is. It just is. Some people know it. Some people cling to the knowledge that they are peddling lies because it is a very good career. It's very lucrative. Some people are absolutely falling for an incredibly widespread propaganda campaign. And it's not born of racism every time. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of racists up to their neck in this kind of stuff, but it's not born of racism. It's born of clicks and giggles. That gets a bigger following. That gets a bigger response. Everybody's poring over numbers. It used to be circulation figures. Now it's going to be online activity. What's getting the biggest responses? What's getting the biggest numbers? We're an unfashionable bunch on this program, is that we always speak our minds and shoot from the hip and hope that things prove popular. What we don't do is have a look at what's popular and then seek to emulate or repeat it. But that is a position of privilege. I've been here for a very long time. And what has drawn my attention this morning is this. I'll give you this juxtaposition of headlines in Rupert Murdoch's Times newspaper. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. That's the news story, okay? And it's true. It's be under no illusions about that. That is true. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals, okay? If it's a headline that you don't like and it's based upon polling, you can, of course, say, well, no one asked me, or how can they possibly get a valid response from a sample of X thousand people? That the science of polling is fairly well established. And while it's not infallible, it is largely reliable. It is the best available guide of what the public think about things. And this headline is true. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. But when you read into the research by YouGov, you make some discoveries that are not reflected in the top headline. I don't know if you heard yesterday's show when Sam Friedman, former education